Thank you, Rennie. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, January 4th, 2018. I'd like to welcome you all. This is the WRFCAC meeting, Water Reclamation Facility Systems Advisory Committee. This is a special meeting replacing the meeting that would have normally been scheduled for Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. I would like to note we have a quorum present with Chairperson John D. Adotti absent, Dale Guerrera absent, and Ann Sullivan absent. All remaining members are here. So I'd like to call this meeting to order. We will have a moment of silent meditation. And I'd like us to rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you. First off, any announcements from WRFCAC members? Michael. Go ahead, Ginny, please.
So for several months, I've been talking about EPA's Water Infrastructure and Resiliency Finance Center, and so today I just quickly went on it. There's not a lot of new information, but there was one thing that I hadn't considered in the past that was up on their website, and that is, and this is specifically to you, Rob, and anybody else who's interested in looking for money trees to help fund this project. They recommend also nonprofit organizations. I never really would have thought of that. And they listed a couple, so maybe we can get these in the minutes. The Johnson Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Ford Foundation, Walton Family Foundation, and Pisces Foundation. And all of these are sources of funding for wastewater treatment plants.
I just want to also update Prop 1 funding in California is being reviewed. And there's six projects that are going on about there's $2.7 billion that was allotted for water storage. So they got six projects for enlarging some dams. But the other projects that are available are the congenitive use, which typically involves putting excess surface water into groundwater where available and then pumping it out later for needed use. This kind of dovetails into what we're doing with the reclamation facility, and especially with the fact that we have sewage continually entering a Morro Basin aquifer. Being able to address that issue, we might be able to get Prop 1 funding for that. I don't have a deadline for application, but if you get on the California Water Environment Federation, they have a link to it. They have a link to it, the Water Environment Federation.
Okay, thank you, Ginny and Richard. I presume Rob and staff got that information, so very good, helpful. All right, I will move on to the public comment period. I will open it up for each agenda item. So initially, I will open up public comment for items not on the agenda. And if you do want to make some public comment, would you please come forward, sign in on the speaker podium so that we get the correct spelling of your name for the record. So any public comment for items not on the agenda, please come forward.
Good afternoon. My name is Carol Truesdale. I've been a resident here since 1995 and homeowner. I want to thank the Public Works Department. I guess they're fixing some leaky tanks or pipes out there, so I just wanted to say thank you. Do I have to sign my name here?
Yes, thank you, Carol. Is there anyone else for public comment at this time?
Good afternoon, Bill Martini. I'm not sure if this, I don't think this is on the agenda, but I just thought I'd bring it up secondhand, and I think it's the bid process that I heard that one of the requirements was you had to have a company that had done $280+ million projects to kind of qualify for the bid process. And my comment is I understand there are companies that have done projects less than that. They're totally well qualified, and this kind of puts them out of the loop, and I think you need to reevaluate the bid process. My understanding, there's one company that can actually give you a plant total reclamation any part of the town for in the $50 million range, which is your current budget. And so I think if that is a drawback as far as the bid process on getting companies that can do plants a lot cheaper, I think you might rethink your bid process. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe we will get to that later in the agenda.
If that's on the agenda, then I apologize.
Oh, no apology necessary. I believe we will be covering that with the presentation, if not duly noted, but thank you. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Hi, my name's David Nelson. I've been around for a bit, and I want to thank you guys for You're serving us. I mean, this should have been a key for we the citizens, because it doesn't seem like we have a voice. I've been to meeting after meeting asking about different technology. Now you have before you, they want a management team for a project that, to my knowledge, can anybody tell me when this project was actually brought to bear as the project? It started out as an example of what we needed, and it continued on, and from this podium I asked that we had bids for information. In other words, you know, we need a sewer plant between $500,000 and $1 million. What do you got out there? Instead, we got a council that was led to believe, I guess. This is all I can figure out, because I've been to a lot of these meetings, and nowhere was it said, this is going to be the project, and we're going to do this. Because if it had, we'd be asking questions like, well, how much does it cost? What's the benefits of it? Because what I've seen from where I am is it went from, in 2011, according to the city website, it went from a $35 million plant, and now we're up to 167 or 155. It's a moving target, and they say that we, the public, are informed. And let me tell you, everybody that I've talked to comes off, one of my friends actually asked me, well, can you prove that there's a plant out there that can do this better? And I go, well, why do I have to prove it? We've spent millions. We have, what, $13 million tied up in sewers, and we haven't even put a shovel in the ground. And it's because they haven't picked the technology. As the last speaker said, the way they drew up this plan is we're building this 20th century plant at 21st century cost, when there are other plants out there even better. And, you know, you'll be hearing it later, but even the numbers that they've been using. And one other thing is there's contractors that are bidding on this should not already have made money off of this project, because they set it up so that a handful of companies can bid on it when there's lots of companies out there that make these. And all you got to do, and I thought that maybe this committee could have got it together to bring in some of these people to feed the information into the community, because the community's totally unaware of what's going on. And sure, the papers are out there, and I read the preliminary plans. I read the whole thing. I mean, people can't do that, though. I mean, I happen to have the time. I'm sorry, but, you know, I've been here so long fighting this same battle, and they're asking you to do something that's totally contrary to what most of the citizens in this town want. And if you were to workshops, you know that most of the people that come up here are against what you're doing.
Thank you for your comments. Any other? All right, thank you. I'll close public comment period. Do we have a timer on that? Okay. Normally, I don't like to do it. It depends on the size of the audience, just to be candid. But if we have a lot of comments, then we will have to do that. So maybe for the next sections, since we have a full agenda today. But thank you all for participating. So that brings us to item A1, the consent calendar. That's the minutes from the last meeting. Does anybody have any updates or corrections to those, or can we approve as is? I didn't see any corrections. I don't know if anybody else did.
I move for approval in the minutes.
All right.
I second.
Thank you. Paul, move for approval. Steve, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. That brings us to business items B1. Draft request for proposals for WRF on-site improvements. So I understand we're going to receive a presentation on the on-site improvements, and also the subcommittee up here of Steve Shively, Paul Donnelly, and Val Levelette. Participated in that, so they may be also adding some comments. So I'll turn it over to Rob. Is that you doing the presentation?
Yes, I'll start it out, and then we'll bring up Mike to go through the slide presentation. Just want to bring up, thanks for Carol Truesdale recognizing. We put out an item on Facebook and Nextdoor. We have a major leak going on right now that we're trying to track down. So it is in north of Highway 41 right now. It hasn't come to the surface yet, but we're losing about 400 gallons a minute of water. So Joe, do you want to add anything? You probably have been updated more than I have on this.
Yeah, we recognized that we were losing about 400 gallons a minute yesterday afternoon, late yesterday afternoon. We had crews working all night long, patrolling the neighborhoods, walking the storm drains and the creeks, and it has not come to the surface yet. So this morning we called in a leak detection service. Unfortunately, they were out of town, so they're on their way to Morro Bay. They should be showing up here by 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon, and they'll be working throughout the evening to detect on lines through sound waves and such to determine where that leak is, and then we'll have the crews make those repairs this evening.
Thank you for the update.
So where exactly, I mean, I know you don't know precisely where the leak is, but where's the general area?
Generally north of Highway 41. That whole area, basically, it's in the nutmeg tank zone. So it's a rather large area to try to isolate. That's what they're working on right now till the leak detector gets there, is isolating certain sections of the system to see if they can stop the leak from occurring and narrow down where it is. Typically, it comes to the surface quicker than this, though.
So you're actually shutting down valves and certain,
yes.
And so people are losing their water.
People will be losing pressure. There. That's why we put the notice out on Nextdoor and Facebook. We didn't have enough time to do the typical door hanger or wait 24 hours notice.
Thank you.
Thank you for that update. Go ahead, Rob.
Sure. Thank you for this item. This is a we're going to go through the RFP process for our new water reclamation facility, and want to bring Mike Nunley from MKN up to the podium to walk us through his presentation. Yesterday we met as a subcommittee, Valerie, Paul, and Steve, to go over the statements of qualifications that have been submitted thus far, or that have been submitted, because there won't be any more being submitted based on the timeline, and recognize that we have 4 qualified firms and recommend all 4 of those move forward through through to the RFP process. Right now, I'm going to turn it over to Mike to walk us through his presentation, follow that by questions from the board, public comment, and any recommendations you might have. This is the first of two meetings we'll have on it. We'll reconvene next week to go over the same item once you've had an opportunity to reflect on the presentation, review the information that was distributed today, and come up with any more questions that you might have before we go to a special council meeting the following week, and then finally council decision on the 23rd on this item. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Good afternoon. I'd like to walk through the design-build RFP. As Rob noted, we'll have the meeting today where we've given you the draft RFP. We'll have a meeting next week to get your initial comments. City Council will have a study session scheduled for the 17th, where they will review it, and then we'll come back to Council on the 23rd. And you know, we've scheduled that Council would review that and possibly release the RFP on that date, and then it would actually be released to the shortlisted teams on the 24th. So one thing I did want to point out is, as you can see, that's a huge, it's a huge document. Many of the materials in a performance criteria report are reference documents, things like soils reports from other projects, some information on lead and asbestos at the existing wastewater plant site. So I don't want you to feel like this is a, you know, it's there's a lot of information there that's provided as reference for the design build teams. The design build, you know, we agree, council moved several months ago to proceed with a design build approach for the water reclamation facility. Best practices from the Design Build Institute of America, DBIA, were used as general guidance, and then the whole process was completely vetted with input from the city attorney. And it meets the state public contracts regulations for cities following this procedure. It is a set procedure for general law cities. And the process and the schedule were presented to council on August the 8th, 2017, and this is just a step in that process. It is a two-step process. The first step the city has gone through, and that was the release of the request for qualifications on October 27th. Statements of qualifications were submitted to the city December 7th, and four teams submitted SOQs. So our review committee met yesterday, and I'll ask the review committee members to jump in if add any comments or adjustments they might have to this. But generally, the conclusion was the committee members agreed that all teams met the qualifications to perform the work, that staff would request more information from teams to address some minor irregularities in the SOQs. In some cases, information was provided, but it wasn't provided in the exact format we'd requested it in. So we're working with staff and the city attorney to reach back out to the proposer and ask them just to provide those, to correct some of those minor irregularities. And the committee, after meeting, recommended, or is going to recommend to council, issuing the RFP to all the proposing teams based on the review they've had so far. So the next steps would include completing and distributing the request for proposal. This is the rough draft or draft that you have in front of you today to the shortlisted design build teams. The proposals will include a guaranteed maximum price, and they'll also provide life cycle costs. We'll coordinate in-person meetings with the design teams to discuss their design concepts, and then we'll negotiate, a city staff will negotiate a final agreement and the GMP with the top-ranked proposer. So the current schedule is today we're presenting the draft RFP to WRFCAC. On the 11th, there'll be a meeting to review initial comments. 17th will be the City Council study session, and then 23rd, City Council will review, and then they'll approve release of the RFP the next day if they approve the RFP. So the scope of the WRF on-site improvements, and I won't go through the whole list, but it's basically all the work confined to the WRF site itself. It excludes connections to the off-site pipelines, like the pipeline that goes back to the ocean outfall that will convey brine and wet weather flows. The connection to the recycled water pipeline. The recycled water pipeline itself will be by others, but this will include all the work on the site to connect to that pipeline, and the connection to the influent force main. And as you all recall, the design of the pipelines and force main are being performed by Waterworks engineers under a separate contract. So this also requires coordination with them during the design process to make sure the pipes meet up at the right spot on the design plans. The request for proposals, the outline generally follows, and we briefly talked about this at the last meeting, but we have three general sections in the RFP. First is general information. Second goes through the procurement process. Third provides documentation requirements for the teams. And then the attachments include the performance criteria report. That's one of your larger attachments there. The proposed contract documents. So this is a progress draft that we're working with the city attorney on. The price proposal instructions, so what the proposers need to provide with their price proposal, the information they need to provide. A proposal question form for any questions they may have to come up in the process, and we're going to use the Procore system for those shortlisted teams so that they can submit their questions, and that can all be tracked in a very very methodical manner. And then sample proposal forms. So we have sample proposal forms at the back for each one of the major process areas where the design builders will talk about footprints of what they've proposed for that particular part of the process, manufacturers, and give us other critical information that's needed for the city to vet those proposals. So the RFP general information section includes a background of the project, the proposal submission and deadlines, procurement schedule, and then what the owner is going to do, the city, and responsibilities. So there's a reference there to the performance criteria report. There's a discussion about the right for the design builder to rely on city-supplied information, and then how to handle conflicts between what the design builder will put together, code requirements, and information provided by the city. The evaluation process will include a pre-proposal conference. DB teams will submit questions. There will be confidential individual meetings with the city between the proposers and the city staff, and that confidentiality allows those design build teams to share their cost savings ideas, and there'll be two meetings with each one of those teams. The teams will provide technical and price proposals, and then there'll be an individual interview with each team after those proposals are submitted. And the city will evaluate the DB team and then come back to WRFCAC, and then WRFCAC will provide a recommendation for council consideration. So the draft evaluation criteria, and this is an area where we really do want to get specific input from WRFCAC. And this is, we worked with city staff on an initial weighting, but the evaluation criteria we looked at were the management approach, so how they propose to manage the project, the quality control and quality assurance, so what procedures they'll have in place, schedule and cost controls, so how they'll monitor and control their schedule and their costs and report those to the city. How they propose to collaborate and integrate with the city. Design builds a fast process, and we want city staff to have as much input and review over that and involvement in that as possible to make sure staff gets what they want. The design development and management, how the design will be developed. Project sequencing and scheduling. Then the quality of the technical proposal and the ideas therein. And price proposal and lifecycle cost. Are the final criteria, and those add up to 100. But that's one area that I think you'll want to think about over the next week in particular, and we'd like to get input from you all particularly on those. And there's discussion in the RFP itself of how each of those is defined, what we're looking for, what's in each of those categories, and how the design builder need to demonstrate they meet that criteria or criterion. The RFP proposal documentation requirements. So proposers will need to submit a cover letter, a technical proposal that addresses all those areas that we just, all those different evaluation criteria specifically. They'll also need to provide their proposed design, including design, preliminary design plans, and a performance guarantee. The price proposal will include a total cost. It would be a total cost plus contract with a guaranteed not to exceed amount. A cost plus proposal table where they fill in all the different items, the bid items we've listed, and then a life cycle cost analysis they'll need to provide. And we've given them parameters for that so that we can make sure we're making this as apples to apples as we can. The performance criteria report is one of the major attachments, and that's really the, for lack of a better term, that's almost the specifications for the project, even though at this point the design builder is responsible for truly putting together the design. But we have the general requirements for the project, what's important to the city, the design criteria, so what they should be designing around, the treatment process overview, the standards and the requirements for each treatment process step, and then the individual performance criteria. How does each part of the process need to perform? What goals does it need to meet? So the outline of the performance criteria report, and I won't go through every single bullet, but really it's all the different disciplines that you would expect for a project like a treatment plant site. Mechanical work, HVAC for the couple of buildings, the civil work, access roads, the demolition and removal of facilities at the existing wastewater plant is in the contract. Facility startup, commissioning, and then transfer of the operations over when the city starts operating it. Security, so all the different types of all the different disciplines you'd expect to be involved in a project of this nature. So one topic that's come up quite a bit in some of the public comment we've seen are the flows presented both in the RFQ and RFP. And I want to talk a minute about those. The estimated design flow, average annual flow, in the RFQ and the facility master plan is 0.97 million gallons per day. And that was estimated by recent flow monitoring efforts and then also historical plant flows going back decades. The design flow assumes no contribution from Cayuga Sanitary District. It assumes non-drought conditions in addition to drought conditions, which I'll show you in a second. 2016 was the lowest year on record for the wastewater plant. Build out service population, so going from the roughly 10,500 population to somewhere in the neighborhood of 12,000, which is kind of your mandated cap. And then peaks caused by seasonal tourism. These are all addressed in the design flows and loadings in the RFQ and RFP. So I want to show quickly a bar chart. So the orange bars represent the City of Moore Bay's contribution to the wastewater plant without Cayucas. The blue represents the Cayucas contribution. And so you can see 1 million gallons a day is pretty darn close to 0.97 MGD. And in the past, the city flows alone, and if you go back decades before more rigorous water conservation was in place, actually exceeded that number. So based on the work that that was done in Facility Master Plan, also some of the ongoing work that's being done with the One Water Plan that's coming to numbers that are very close to this, there's confidence in those numbers. Now, what we've done in the RFP, though, is we've provided the flow information and loading information, and we've also given them the data. We're also going to provide them all the electronic data that was used to develop those numbers. And we've asked the design builder to do is present their own design criteria. That's very important for a couple of reasons. One is they may find a different way to deal with the peak flows than what had been proposed in the facility master plan. And they may want to go through and do their own analysis we want them to own the design decisions to the extent they can. So we're going to provide all the information to them, give them, for example, what was presented in facility master plan, but then they'll be reviewing and developing, either confirming those flows or looking at their, adjusting those slightly depending on their review of the data.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yes.
Okay, so you mentioned that we had several comments on this aspect. I don't know if you can answer this. Maybe we might want to have the commenter talk a bit too. But I don't understand where one of the commenters suggested that the RFQ overstated by 71% the flows.
Okay.
And I don't know how that was derived. You just stated some of the assumptions.
Sure. What I can tell you where the numbers came from for facility master plan. And if you look at plant flow records, you can see that the numbers, you know, are not overly conservative. When you look at plant flows for just Morro Bay,
right,
going back, you know, 10 plus years. One analysis I saw was somebody had taken the 2016 flows at the plant, which, as you see, are really the lowest on record, going back decades. And then they subtracted off the flows from Cayucas. And I'm not sure if that was a build-out flow for the plant or what design flow that was, but that was about a 0.27 MGD, if it's the analysis that I saw. And so when you do that math, you wind up with a lower flow, but that would not be an appropriate design flow for this new for the city's new plant.
So, Mike, to clarify here, these are average flows, correct?
These are average annual flows.
Right. We talked about this. This is important because a lot of citizens are bringing this up. We talked about this at the last meeting because I specifically asked about V&A doing some more analysis, that $105,000 contract, and I believe the answer from either you or Rob was that they were verifying those flows, and that we have to plan more for the maximum versus the average. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll ask Rob to jump in from the One Water perspective.
Okay.
Yes, V&A is looking at flows for our sanitary sewer master plan, and we have confirmed that the design flows for the treatment plant are appropriate for the design. It is important in the design of the facility that we consider both average daily flows and then also the peaks that we experience. We experience peaks due to wet weather, and we experience also summertime peaks due to additional folks being in town.
Like 4th of July or something.
Like 4th of July, and when all the homes and hotels are full. So those are considerations that have to be in the design of the facility. That probably relates more to flow equalization and pumping capacity than it does the nameplate capacity on the treatment plant itself. So it'll be used to size our upfront equalization. So we'll want to hold some of that wastewater back and meter it through the facility so that we don't oversize the facility. We've taken consider, we're trying to optimize the size of the facility and optimize the size of the equalization.
So, but if you don't build it large enough to accommodate the maximum flows, where does that water go for the layman?
We hold it back in equalization.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And meter it through the facility. So you wouldn't... Our peak flows is somewhere around 8 million gallons a day. You wouldn't design the facility to treat 8 million gallons a day because day in and day out, you might be operating it at 900,000 gallons per day, and you would have to take so much of the treatment plant offline, you would have overbuilt it.
Exactly.
So we're looking to optimize that number so that we minimize the operational changes that have to be made throughout the day, that we can set it and run that same volume of water through the treatment plant.
So you can't simply just take the 2016 annual report for the marine research, 816,000 back at 2.25 for Cayucas, and come up with the right number. That's what the 71% was based on.
I believe so. Like we've stated, that 2016 number is the lowest number on record due to a couple of things. It didn't rain a lot, so we had no I&I inflow and infiltration, the water that gets into the pipes from stormwater. And we were in the depths of the highest level of water conservation that we've ever experienced here. My professional opinion is indoor water use, it's going to be difficult to conserve much more than the city is already conserving, and it'll be difficult to sustain that level of conservation over time.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. Ginny, does that answer your question?
Well, it answers my question. I just want to make sure that the people that brought up this concern, that they feel comfortable with the response. The only other question that I had about that was, how did you estimate that Morro Bay is going to grow to 12,000? What's that based on?
There's a measure, a citizens initiative, that set the maximum population of Morro Bay at 12,200. The facilities master plan looked at growth rates over time and picked 12,000 coincided with 25 years of growth. That's how 12,000 was the growth rate that was picked.
And historically, the town has pretty much remained the same, right?
We've grown over time.
And in the past couple of years, we've lost some people.
Yeah, it's about 0.5% to 1% a year of growth that we generally grow at.
Okay.
In the recession, we did lose a few folks that didn't move back, but we've started to come up from that. I think the 2010 census had us at about 10,236, and current estimates are about 10,700.
Yeah, Rob, I'm glad you included the part about the future population. That's included in these numbers, right?
That is correct.
But the other thing is that obviously you don't want to underestimate the design. But I guess really the bottom line is that if we estimate a little higher, factor safety a little bit more, what's the harm as far as expense to the plan? Are we looking at a great deal of expense for nothing, or are we just optimizing that and the expense is really negligible as far as overestimating the flow?
In the range that could be considered overestimation, in my view, it's a fairly small dollar amount. Joe has probably a little bit more experience with that. I think we're talking a few $100,000 in treatment capacity is maybe what we've overestimated, if we have overestimated.
I'm not so concerned about treating that water. It's just that building a plant that's oversized, the expense that we put in too much money to build too big of a plant, too expensive a plant, and now it's running like Los Osos, about half. It seems like that would be a wasted cost. I want to know whether or not the flow rate is that sensitive to the cost of the construction of the plant itself. I guess the biggest thing that you keep talking about is the equalization basin.
Yes.
That's a big piece of the plant. And if we make it a little bit smaller, are we saving a whole lot of money because we wanted to use those lower flow?
Correct. And we're putting that on the design builder to optimize and to size that equalization. We're giving them all the flow and loading data to make their own conclusion. They need to own those flows and size the plant appropriately.
I got a question. Why is Waterworks have a separate contract for the lift station and the force main?
So, Rob, I can tackle that one. Starting in, I think, October 2015, we started talking about the recommended approach to design and construct this project was take the pipelines, which require detailed design plans because you have utility conflicts, you have possible interruption of businesses, traffic impact. You have the need to negotiate with Caltrans for pipeline easements. And you also have the detailed design of the lift station that the city's going to want to be intimately involved with. And when you put all that together, the advantage of going design build is really not there. The other issue is that's not as time critical, that part of the project, as the WRF itself. So the goal with the WRF itself was to expedite the project, save money because it's essentially a greenfield site, meaning there's no construction there. A design builder has a blank slate to work with for design and construction. And, you know, the city doesn't is going to be reviewing interim design plans and being involved with that. They'll be involved with that process. But, you know, the need to produce 100% plans before construction begins just is not as critical as the need to move fast and save money on the WRF part of it. So the incentive is not the advantage is not there, though, on, you know, a 2+ mile pipeline project and lift station.
How are you sizing it?
The
lift station.
The lift station, of course, ma'am.
You're sizing it based on 0.9 million gallons a day.
That's correct.
Do you have a letter from the Coastal Commission stating that they're going to have an LCP amendment for heavy industrial use there?
We went into a bit of detail the last time regarding this subject and whether we have an LCP amendment. No, we do not have a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission for a lift station.
No, I'm not saying a coastal development permit. I'm asking if you have a letter that they will be amiable to have an LCP amendment to put in heavy industrial, put in a lift station there. I mean, to me, it's like before you start designing your plant and everything, you got to have, like, you got to have a green light from Coastal saying that you could put a lift station in where you want to put a lift station and have an LCP amendment.
I don't believe that we need an LCP amendment for a lift station there. No, I don't.
But you would need one for a treatment plant if you put one there?
Coastal believes that we do.
Coastal believes that you'd have to have an LCP amendment to put in a lift station in the same spot that you're going to put in a lift station?
Yes.
That's what they told you?
That's what they told us at the hearing on January 13th.
So you don't need an LCP amendment to put in a lift station?
In my opinion, no.
No, not in your opinion, in the Coastal Commission's opinion.
I don't know what the opinion of the Coastal Commission is.
Well, don't we need to get Coastal Commission to weigh in and make sure that we're moving forward and we got a green light to do this?
We've had their staff weigh in, and they've discussed this with us. They understand the need for a lift station at the location, and they're willing to recommend that move forward.
And you have that in writing?
No, we don't have that in writing.
Well, don't you think we should get that in writing before we move forward?
I don't believe it's necessary to get that in writing before we move forward.
Thank you, Rob. Go ahead, Mike, please.
Okay. So how do you really reduce those design flows? One approach, of course, is to reduce the infiltration and inflow. So those are the wet weather flows that come into the sewer system. Replacing sewer mains, there are up to 53 miles of sewer mains in the city. Replacing house laterals, over 5,500 house laterals. Not realistic to replace all those mains and laterals and eliminate all those wet weather flows. It's often very difficult to determine where those exactly, precisely are coming from. And agencies spend decades working on reducing their infiltration and inflow by taking a pipe at a time approach.
Let me interrupt you here.
Okay.
We have a 6040 Main Street sewer line that we know is leaching sewage into our drinking water aquifer. We've determined that through a sucralose test, okay? You wouldn't do a sucralose test unless you suspect sewage in your drinking water aquifer. In 2012, the regional board asked you to do a sucralose test. So it's not a question of replacing all the laterals. It's a question of prioritizing. Now, in 2008, the city staff said that they're going to have a CIP and fix that line. It's 2018, 10 years later, okay? So having reducing INI is you can't talk about INI without talking about exfiltration.
Richard, I think we went through this last time, and I'm willing to do it later at the end of the meeting, but right now I think we need to get through Mike's presentation.
He brought
questions,
it up.
Questions, public comment, duly noted. Thank
you. And two, the city's going to continue to repair and replace sewer mains. The Main Street project is one of the CIPs. There are others that are contributing, INI as well. But this, and the city will have to, most cities spend decades working on this a bit at a time. And the city's got to take wet weather years into account when sizing the plant. So the site plan currently is pending. We're working on a revised version with city staff. We're going to show a potential layout, desired adjacency of facilities, require site planning for solar panels to be constructed by others under a purchase agreement that'll be contracted separately to reduce capital costs to the city. Will identify the setbacks from swales and dry creeks, provide dimensions for the property and also alignment of the easements, show preferred location on the property site, and the design build teams will optimize the site plan and they'll develop their own off of it. But it'll give them an idea of how the city wants the different processes to flow. Speaking of process flow in a different way, the process flow chart is one of our exhibits. It's a very high-level process flow chart to show the processes that we envision based around the MBR process. And color-coded some of the different process areas, but the goal here is really to depict what we expect the design builder to be responsible for. And really, they're responsible for all the process decisions, but to give them an idea of what elements we expect to see in their design. An example criteria table from the performance criteria report is for grit removal. And this just gives you an example of the information we've put in there. So the first is, one of the parameters is total number of units. Give them an idea of how many we want on duty, meaning functioning, and how many are on standby, meaning they're ready to be switched over and brought into operation if one of them has a failure or maintenance or needs to be taken down for maintenance. What the design flow should be based on, what the performance should be, in this case, how much grit should be removed at different flows so that nobody's over-designing or under-designing that piece of the facility. Grit removal is located upstream of a lot of your treatment processes in the plant, and it's just what it sounds like. It's a system to get rid of grit so that it doesn't wind up in treatment basins downstream where it's way more expensive to get it out. The type of grit removal, allowable manufacturers and vendors. So we've given a list there of ones that we know are high level of quality. Where odor control is required and what we want to see for odor control. Operational flexibility. And what we'd like to be able to do in terms of bypassing for that part of the system. And then we have another requirement in there on freeboard, how much space we want above the peak flows to make sure we don't ever risk, we don't risk an overflow. Odor control will be provided for the most critical treatment processes, and this was one of the recommendations that came from the peer review panel several months ago. So influence screening, where sewage comes into the plant, that grit removal step that we talked about, and then one bay of the flow equalization. So we envision the flow equalization being a multi-bay structure, meaning it's basically a rectangular basin with walls in it, and one walled partition of that is a bay, and it would continue to receive flow all the time, and that'll allow Joe to pace the operation downstream so that it's running at a steady state, so it gives us the best operability, best life cycle cost, and is the most predictable. And so we'd cover that bay that's receiving flow the most. Anticipated mitigation measures are also discussed in the performance criteria report. So the cultural and biological reports have been prepared for South Bay Boulevard site. The Los Osos Wastewater Plant EIR was used as a source of material for some of the potential mitigation measures. And mitigation measures for the project at South Bay will solidify through development of the EIR. So an allowance will be provided to the design builders for unanticipated mitigation measures.
Did you discuss any major concerns, or did you not come across any in terms of the cultural and biological reports?
I can ask John to step into that. But
OK.
I
know we talked about it a couple months ago, but I was just wondering, now that this is completed, any surprises?
No real surprises. I think what we have to think about here is more programmatic, especially on the cultural side, because a lot of things about cultural is you may find something you didn't know about when you start digging. So there's a whole set of procedures that we want to prescribe into the process to make sure that's followed here. In the case of biology, we know what the resources are. The key resource is the drainage, the coastal stream, and the habitat quality that might be affected by that. So again, we're using criteria to avoid that, and if we have to deal with that, what are the steps needed to do replacement, habitat enhancement, and so forth. So we're just assuming that right now because we're still in the middle of doing the EIR for this. We're making those assumptions based on the bio report that's going into the EIR, but the EIR itself will draw its own conclusions. We also looked very carefully at the Los Osos EIR and other EIRs, Cayucas's, for example, to see where the mitigation world fell in those EIRs and use that as basic assumptions here, applying what we know about this site as well.
Thank you.
The RFP includes proposed contract documents. So we worked together with the city attorney on a draft agreement that'll be provided to the design build teams for their review. They can request modifications, but the final agreement's going to require approval from city council.
How are you planning on mitigating the greenhouse gas energy usage?
The part of the EIR, the work with the EIR, will look at greenhouse gas emissions and impact from that. So one of the measures will, of course, be the solar, the solar panels, opportunity to put those at the plant. Another, we've also looked at different, we're also looking for different energy efficiency recommendations, energy recovery recommendations throughout the plant in the performance criteria report.
And kind of in the South Bay, if you had a issue and had to had a issue of a spill, for instance, where would that end up?
Well, it depends on where the spill occurred.
At the plant.
If it was a spill at the plant is designed to contain all of the drainage adjacent to the basins and the treatment facility, so that gets sent back to the headworks for treatment. And to prevent flow from going down to that swale that leads to Trojo Creek. So the design requires that there be a drain system that will collect all that and be able to send that back to the headworks after whatever overflow event might have occurred that we don't let that go off site.
You know, we know that climate change and the storm severities are going to increase. We have that data already. If that overspills, it's going to go into Trojo Creek and then go into the Back Bay, correct?
If it would spill, but there are a lot of different measures in place to keep that from occurring.
Okay, I mean, but if it does, then
first, but I just want to go through, just so you all understand, that there are a number of measures in place to prevent an overflow. First, there will be an emergency generator that will be able to power the entire facility in the event of a power outage. Mm-hmm. All the basins will be constructed with freeboard, and with also the capability to be able to operate with a basin out of service at peak flows. Mm-hmm. So we build everything into this type of facility. This is a critical piece of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The other is that plant drain system. The fact that plant drain system collects even the runoff right in the vicinity of those basins, collects all that water in the event that there's a spill so that doesn't go off site. So if all those measures fail, yes.
Okay. Because one of my concerns is we have in the Back Bay, we have a State Marine Reserve, and the State Marine Reserve requirement has a more stringent fines for spillage as the CMC finds out.
We're also working, we've met with the Bay Foundation a few weeks ago, so working closely with them on the project. We've laid it out, talked with them about it, so we're in regular dialogue with them to make sure that we address the concerns of the estuary program too.
Mike, real quick, I don't know if you'll have it in the proposal or if it's something the city will do itself. Will there be a spill contingency plan that the city will have on hand?
The city will develop one. Yeah.
The city will do that. And one of the things, we kind of talked about this yesterday, but if that were to happen, I imagine you would probably want to stop the lift station and store your flows before it went to the plant. so you can attenuate it at the plant and then resume normal operations. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, we'll have a full SCADA system so that we can operate the entire wastewater system.
Yeah, using the SCADA is just is operational, but when you shut off that lift station, do you have a sanitary sewer overflow that you're going to dump it through the outfall? Is that what you're going to do to keep it from spilling on ground?
Well, we wouldn't allow that to occur. We'd actually have an emergency response contingency plan. Like Mike said, we're required by the state to do that. So if we had an emergency at the plant, we'd address that emergency, back up the lift station. If by chance, you know, we still had problems at the plant, we do have multiple basins that we can bring it up to. We would do everything possible to avoid basically a spill at a lift station.
Okay.
So just like a lift station, you know, down where the current treatment plant is, you know, we have three other lift stations throughout town. We have emergency response plans for every one of those lift stations.
Yeah,
you know, so we have emergency backup generators there. We have, you know, portable pumps that we can connect up, quick connections and hoses on site. So we do take into account emergency response. We can't anticipate every natural emergency or emergencies, but we do basically anticipate as much as we can.
Yeah, but my question is if your lift station, you're going to be shutting it down if you have a problem at the plant, right?
But only to the extent possible.
And the flows are still coming in.
Only to the extent possible. You know, if it, you know, we wouldn't shut it down and just let it overflow onto the ground. You know, we basically have contingency plans for all that. But again, at this stage, we don't know what the new plant's going to look like, what the equalizations are is going to look like. But we will, you know, through our operations staff, develop an emergency response plan to adequately address that. That's a requirement of every plant.
Okay, so are you going to have a sanitary sewer overflow at the lift station? In case you have to.
That would not be the intent. The intent is to eliminate all sanitary sewer overflows. We would not design something with the intent that we're going to overflow onto the ground. That would not be our intent.
Okay. So another element in the for the price proposals, we've identified an allowance in the RFP. And the goal of that is to allocate risk appropriately and to reduce cost to the city ultimately. So the proposed allowance right now includes environmental mitigation for any unforeseen conditions that could come up from the EIR or from permitting. We vetted the conditions with ESA, the EIR consultant, the anticipated conditions we put together in the performance criteria report. And we've also provided this allowance, and this is not a slush fund for the contractor. But if things come out of the EIR and we come to the contractor and we say, you need to include this in the project, they have an allowance of up to $1 million right now. We would work with them on what part of that allowance would be applied towards the mitigation. So they'd need to submit a proposal for that. We need to approve it before they got to use it. But the goal there is to, if you have too much risk onto the design builder in the process, bids go up. So you've got to have some of these allowances for things that are truly out of their control, and that truly would be. So the price proposal is the agreement developed in conjunction with the attorney is a cost-plus agreement with a guaranteed maximum price. So how this works is the compensation will include the cost of the contractor performing the work and a negotiated markup or fixed percentage. And it cannot exceed that guaranteed maximum price. But it works kind of like a time and materials not to exceed contract like the city often uses with consultants. The objective there is to have total transparency on what the consultant, on what the contractor's costs are in the event that we get into a change order negotiation, or it also makes it easier to track where they are in the process and what their progress, what their payment should be for that particular month of their work. The DB team will be paid for all their expenses plus that fee or profit, but it cannot exceed that guaranteed maximum price. The price proposal, and we've included that proposal table, a sample of the proposal table or the quote bid sheet, if you will. So we have sections in that price proposal sheet for each major process area. And give you an example over on the right there. That's for the general site and civil. You see all the different costs that we've broken out for that design builder to fill in for us. And it's everything from the site work, including earthwork and grading, to the access road, connection to the off-site water line, extension. And then that's one of the sections that's in that price proposal, and then there are several others, and they fill in those boxes. We also have submittal requirements for life cycle cost. So we're requiring that they give us a life cycle cost for the proposed project, including the anticipated equipment replacement over a 30-year life cycle period, and then give us a detailed projection of operator man hours required to perform all typical operations activities. And then we've asked them also for the initial 5-year energy maintenance and replacement costs. And that's to help us with budgeting, also to look at the assumptions they've made in their design and work with them on optimizing that for the city. Proposal question form, and this just allows the DB teams to submit questions or requests for clarifications and concerns in writing to Rob via Procore using the form. And then we have the sample proposal forms. And the objective with providing the sample proposal forms is for the design build teams to describe the proposed design and operation of each of the treatment processes they're going to provide. And they've got to demonstrate their understanding of the performance requirements on those forms. And they can also propose alternative technical or management concepts, or ATCs, for consideration. Now, ATCs, the design build team could submit a proposal that will offer an alternative means to achieve the required performance criteria. So if somebody said, we don't want to do an MBR, we want to do something a little different, and maybe it's activated sludge followed by membrane filtration. If you recall some of the discussions we had during the facility master plan development a couple years ago now. Those alternative treatment concepts, though, whatever they propose has to meet or exceed the requirements set forth to be considered. And it has to guarantee a cost savings to the city, and they have to guarantee the performance requirements. And then city staff vet that to determine if that really is equivalent.
Is there a possibility that might happen after all the study that we've done?
Well, there is a possibility.
Well, like what?
You could see the one I mentioned could be an activated sludge plant followed by membrane filtration. Could be proposed in lieu of MBR, but they still need to provide either the reverse osmosis, the UV, and advanced oxidation. Those are all requirements for groundwater recharge. So a lot of that plant doesn't change regardless. But we want to open this up because if a designer has a better concept that'll still meet the city's goals, then we want to make sure we allow leeway for that, because the most critical thing for us are costs and performance.
Okay.
Question, please, Mike. On page 5, you talk about the pre-proposal conference. Is that all bidders in attendance at once for the pre-proposal individual? And number 2, is that open to public or anybody?
That's all together with the proposers. Regarding whether that's open to the public, I'd ask.
I've never been to one that was was open.
Or
to the
any of our members or some of your staff. I'm just curious, you know.
Yeah, typically they aren't.
Okay.
We could change that.
Okay, we'll see if we get a request on that. And then another quick question on page 13, where you talk about the DB team will be paid for all expenses plus fee or profit. Are you referring to like incidental expenses and travel and things like that? And if so, are we putting a markup on top of that? And a profit?
There'll be markup applied to all the expenses overall, so yes, there will be. But they'll have to propose that. That'll all have to be within their guaranteed maximum price.
But is that standard in government-type arrangements like this where you put a markup on, like, travel expenses? I typically don't see that, so, in the private sector.
Yes, it's standard. Because in some cases, too, the contractor will have a subcontractor, mm-hmm. and that subcontractor could have a sub. I mean, so you might go several rungs down the ladder, so the markup's applied overall.
Yeah, I understand on the first bullet, and that markup, I assume, includes not only profit, but G&A, burden.
That's correct.
Or anything
general
else
conditions, insurance,
yeah.
All that sort of.
Okay. I just, it seems a little unusual on the expenses, in my opinion only. Thank you.
Okay.
Just want to clarify, it does need to stay within the guaranteed maximum price, though, too. So we can't exceed what they give us as a guaranteed maximum price without council authorization.
Any questions? Go ahead, start, Steve, please, and then I'll open up for public comment.
Actually, I was going to reserve my questions for once after I get to look through the RFP. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Paul?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. Going back to when we requested the statements of qualifications, and we got four firms. We talked about this yesterday. There was more than that obviously expressed interest and attended the mandatory meeting. So we got less than half of that was expressed interest in what we received in the four?
Yes, we received about half of the firms that were at the mandatory pre-SOQ meeting that ended up submitting statements of qualifications.
And one of those firms that attended the mandatory meeting was PERC at that meeting?
PERC was not at that meeting.
They did not attend that. Okay.
They had one of their partners that they had built the Pacific Grove facility with was there at that meeting.
Okay. And then on the evaluation criteria, it's pretty much all on the design aspect. Is there any evaluation points towards the construction aspect? I mean, the team will be an engineer and a contractor, correct?
Sure. So in terms of the management approach, QC and QA, scheduling, cost controls, those are really as much construction as they are design. So those are really both. And we, in fact, asked them to give us different QC and QA plans for both because it's a different measure. The project sequencing and scheduling, again, this design build is an integrated process. So they truly, these teams are collaborating together. The technical proposal and even the price proposal and lifecycle cost, those are as much construction as they are design. So I'd say it'd be hard to filter out which ones of those are heavier on the design side and which ones of them are heavier on the construction side, because that contractor is intimately involved with that technical proposal. They're looking at what the designer puts together, and they're coming together with a combined project.
And then the numbers we're asking for as far as cost goes, those do not include the actual construction of the plant, do they?
They include full construction of the plant. That's a guaranteed maximum price.
We will know when the proposals come in what the plant will cost us.
Yes. Okay. The maximum.
Yes.
And one other thing, getting back to the infiltration problem that seems to be up, we discussed this a little bit yesterday. One of the areas you're really concerned about right now is the beach tract area, and something Joe mentioned, that some of it's the manholes and whatnot. You're going to do a smoke test up there soon. Is that where our problem area is in town?
That is one of the identified high inflow areas during storm events. So later this month, we actually will be smoke testing that area and identifying some of the loose connections in that area and coming up with a replacement and repair project.
Is there anything the public can do to help the problem with infiltration system?
Yeah, there actually is a lot of things that the public can do, and we're in the process of looking at putting out a flyer to kind of provide some educational material. But a lot of the inflow does come from uninformed citizens, where they're actually routing their either their storm drains, their gutters off their houses, or a low spot in their backyard into the sanitary sewer system. So that's one of the main things that we do recognize happens, and we're going to provide some educational material and hopefully be able to identify even some of those areas when we do the smoke testing and correct those.
Valerie. Ginny.
I just have one additional question. This is for Rob. I guess I was surprised that so few people, you got so few bidders. And you said that initially, I think there were eight people that were interested, potentially interested, more than eight. What was some of the feedback you got when you followed up with those people? Why didn't they want to bid on this?
It's based on market. It's based on risk. One of the firms that we talked to was not satisfied that we didn't have a rate structure in place that would retire the potential debt on the project before they... It's quite costly to put one of these going beyond the submittal of statement of qualifications process, going into the proposal process. It'll probably cost these firms upwards of, you know, $100,000, $200,000 to prepare, because they're just doing design work at this point. So they have to weigh our project against other projects in the probably in the Western U.S. That they're going for. We're in the engineering world, we're lucky because there's a lot of wastewater and water projects going on right now. Not so good in the bidding environment because of the limited amount of contractors that do this work.
Your outreach, I mean, you went through this before, but maybe for the benefit of the audience today, what was the outreach to try to encourage bidders?
We advertised on conventional bid boards. We did direct outreach to all the major design bid firms. We held meetings with them. We tried to sell our project as much as they're selling their services to encourage more proposers, or at least more folks, to submit statements of qualifications at this point in time.
Richard, any questions? Thank you. I'd like to open up. I'd like to open up for public comment now relating to this item B1. Please come forward and sign your name either before or after you speak so we have your name on the record. Thank you. Welcome, Barry.
Good afternoon. Barry Brandon, Morro Bay. I hope my voice holds up. Someone asked a question about 71% over, and I'd like to clear that up if I may. This is the front page on our water reclamation facility project. This is the bid that was just put out by the RFQ that we keep talking about, signed by Mr. Livick. So when you go back on page 4 of 11, it's only 11 pages, he talks about the flow, 1 million gallons a day. And the flow that he has on the bid request is 0.97, or 970,000 gallons a day. Now, there was a chart put up here a while ago, and that chart indicated a downward flow. I wish I could have it back, but I think you can look and very carefully see that the flow in Morro Bay is not 970. The flow in Morro Bay is closer to closer to 7. At the worst case, that's with the peaks. But if you really take out the EIR that Cayucas did, Cayucas's EIR was very careful. I'd love to share it with you. They looked at all the details, and they said that they're going to have 274,000 gallons a day that they're going to take out of the plant. 274,000 gallons will not be there. Okay. So the problem we have is 970. That's I lose all trust when I see a number like that, when they show me a chart like this, and you can see it if you go across. It looks like about 700,000 to me, and I'm going to point it out.
500,000 gallons a day. That's 700,000 gallons a day. And that's 2016. We have a strict water conservation program going on.
That flow reduction has continued to go on. We don't have it for 2017. I believe it's going to continue to go down. All the reports say the same thing. Now, the flows that were done for this project were done by the Wallace Group. And the Wallace Group did all the loads and flows that we're using, and they've been reviewed, I know. But the Wallace Group are the same people that came up with the loads and flows for Los Osos. And that plant right now is at full hookup, is less than half of what the design criteria was for because of the factor of people are conserving water. Now, I know you talk about, well, we got to take care of the peaks, but the peaks are a percentage of the base number. Okay, and if you go through the reports in here, you take the base number times 1.5. Well, obviously, if you have a higher base, like 970, and you put 1.5 on that, it makes it go really up. But if you get it down where it really is, 700,000, or in my estimation, the real flow is under 600,000 gallons a day in Morro Bay. So I feel that you had a very nice dog and pony show, but the real facts have been skipped over. And so when I see this number, it forces me to not really feel comfortable with what else I'm getting. And I know Mr. Livick has a comeback, but that's the facts. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert.
I'm Jeff Heller, and I'd like to thank you all so much for the hundreds, if not thousands, of hours you've put in trying to represent the community members with this very complex, technical, expensive project. It's not an easy one to understand. Item B1 is what I'd like to speak to, which has been some discussion about, and that's the short list of four qualified design build teams. And the question I think that needs to be answered by everybody here, particularly you on the committee, is why the only bidders right now are major international design firms. And I just wonder how many towns of 10,200 people are hiring these major international firms. And the one I'd like to speak to most directly is AECOM. One of the four. All four are major. But I know a little bit about this firm because about 20 years ago I worked for it for 5 years. I was involved in pursuing work, so I understand the strategy and why large firms pursue work. And ultimately, it's because of the money. AECOM has 87,500 employees. Their gross revenues last year were $18.8 billion. They typically build major projects, infrastructure projects, around the world, the Middle East. They work in 150 different countries. The question I've got to ask, and I'd like you to ask yourselves, is why would a company this big, this successful, propose on a project for a sewer plant for people with a population of 10,000 people? In the pursuit of projects, when I worked there, we had very strict format that we would go through before we would submit our qualifications for a project. It had to have a strategic advantage. We had to have relationships in place either with the public agency or with the firms working on it, or we had to make a heck of a lot of money. At $150, $160 million, I'm thinking AECOM is probably thinking, we're going to make a heck of a lot of money. The budget for this project is outrageous. Borders on malfeasance. It's an absolute crime. And you know, hundreds of people in this community have spent thousands of hours, as you have, finding flaws in the documents, uncovering things and questions that no one has asked. It's not that we don't have anything else to do. It's because this project is so out of whack, and I'm asking you as a Citizens Advisory Committee to reject the RFQ process on the sheer basis of every one of these four approved companies or teams are major multinational firms. Completely overkill. Thank you so much.
Bart Beckman, Morro Bay. Thank you. And again, as Jeff indicated, you guys have done a great job. This is, I don't know, 4 or 5 years into this, and I think almost all of you are here every meeting. It's unbelievable. The flow rates, I think we really need to take that discussion offline in a roundtable discussion to look at this. Looking at data beyond that, quite frankly, doesn't make sense and adds to my concern about who you're picking to do the analysis. Why you have a chart going back to 1992 when clearly that is not what's happening today? You could possibly take the last 4 years. That might be a reasonable thing to do. I'm going to get to some comments made. I've got so many that came up. One is evaluation criteria that Paul talked about. 20% of their criteria has to do with, is this a cost-effective plant? There is sort of an ATC or whatever the acronym was to get alternatives, but it's within constraints. They're highly designed. One of the thoughts initially was, let's just bid it. We'll tell them it's 0.97 or 0.6 or something. Give us a proposal. We would have gotten, I think, some creative ideas. But to say 20% of the criteria, and then you've got QA. QA is a term applied for nuclear power plants, folks. That's where you use that. When working for Edison, we had to almost not let ex-San Onofre people work on fossil plants because they would bring the mentality of quality assurance. The big companies are set to do well with this criteria because they have all the paperwork. They've got the project management system. They've got all that. So they're going to nail it. The little guys basically said, no, I'm going to go build you a plant. The one that's kind of interesting is the Flanic. They're the ones doing Cayucas for $19 million. I will guarantee you this is not the bid that they bid on. That project is going to be done for $19 million their part, another $6 million. Okay, if you double that, which is about what we've been talking about, the R-flows versus Cayucas, you get $50 million. If you triple it, you get $75 million. So even if you want to use what I would call bogus numbers, you still are at $75 million if you just let people bid cookie-cutter plants. The recommendation to keep, well, let me go in, and either item was in here.
We're going to wrap it up pretty soon, but we do have your comments.
One item, the demo of the existing plant, we've got to address that because Cayucas and their EIR has suggested, hey, you guys don't need to do it. So they're kind of jabbing us with that one. And the last item to sort of think about, and there's a lot of things to think about, but one is to literally, if we can't figure out how to get this cost down, let's buy a service from Cayucas. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Hi, David Nelson. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, what the last speaker said really hits to the core of this. I mean, we need a sewer system. What we've picked here is, like, I need a car, so I'm going to go and I'm going to get outside contractors to build me a car instead of going and just buying the car that I need and driving it. I mean, this is how simple this should be. I mean, instead of qualifications and ideas for how to build this plant that one of the company, the gentleman that was telling us about it, that's like a sales pitch. But that's not what we need. I mean, we need to go out there and say we need, you know, 600, 900 million, 1,000 gallons a day and let everybody bid on it. I mean, we set up this so that only these people that we're talking about with Southern accents instead of California accents and keeping the money in our state, because there are people here building these module plants. I mean, not to think module and not to put that out here for bid. Let them bid to build this old-fashioned plant and let other people come in like PERC and a half a dozen other companies on the East Coast that are just dying for clients, no matter how many is being built.
they can put out crews and they can build these things, and they come in here on trucks and they put them out. Now, I know this, and I had a good friend say, well, how do you prove this? Well, we prove it by going down and looking at those PERC plants and seeing what their costs are. On page 14 here, they give this whole section where the energy and all those costs are not even predicted. They can predict everything else, but they're not going to tell us about what they have planned and what they call a project. And that's my one question to everybody up here. Can somebody tell me when this was chosen as the project? I've been to many meetings. I've been to a lot of workshops, many city council meetings. I've been involved since the early 2000s. So I've been to a whole lot of places, and we were promised and at least led to believe, let me say led to believe in the last 4 years, that after that project was canceled to rebuild our other plant, with this plant that they're talking about, all of these flows were done 4 years, 6, 8 years ago when they were going to replace the plant. But here they are on a new plant, and we're paying people to do work twice. You know, because nothing has changed on that plant from when it was on the old plant to now. I was under the impression that we were going to have people like PERC, and PERC came in and spent their $100,000 pitching this 7 years ago. And it's on video. I hope everybody got the chance to see it. Supposedly some of the council people saw it. But they spent $100,000. And it's the same situation that we're in here right now. They want to build this, and they don't want to hear about anything else. And that, and we're being pushed into this, and we're not going to pay. We're not going to pay the tax on this. We're not going to pass that. So everything they do is going to be wasted. Thank you.
My name's Tom Rost, Morro Bay. I want to answer a couple of questions.
Tom, can you lower the speaker so we can hear you, sir? Thank you.
Is it Jenny? My glasses don't. Is that
Barbara
correct?
Jenny.
I think you asked the question, why didn't we have others bidding? I can tell you why, and that's because the way they wrote, Black and Veatch wrote the specifications to be qualified, were that you had to have built in the last 5 years, 85 million dollar plants in the last 5 years. And you had, there were some other qualifications that took all of the little contractors and design build people out. So that eliminated them right from the get-go. So when they put out the invitation to bid, they don't meet the qualification, so they're not going to spend their time. I used to own an engineering company that operated from Fairfield, California to Frankfort, Kentucky. And we had five major offices across the United States. So I know that, and I know that Black and Veatch is a quality company, but they're worldwide. They're the big dogs. You don't need a big dog in this 10,200 population city. Number two, sir, you asked absolutely point-on questions. You don't design and ask for building a pipeline and a lift station until you know what you're going to put through it. What is the size? What of pipe do you need for X number of gallons flow per minute, per second, per day? So they've got the horse way down the road, but they're not pulling any buggy with it. As a person told me yesterday, Morro Bay could pay 35 cents to have their laundry done if they go to Cayucas. But no, they want to pay $2.50 in Morro Bay. That doesn't make very good sense. and your dollars, if you look at what is known, the $19 million for Cayucas, and you look at this project, you're so far out of bounds. It's absolutely a raping of the public.
Thank you for your comments.
Hi, my name is Vicki Baggett. I'm from Morro Bay here. I'm here to request that you recommend a new project manager for our current project. The people of Morro Bay, including me, have much uncertainty and questions about the new plant, including the fact that it's being shoved down our throat at an outrageous cost. Logically, one would think when you build a new plant, you would get an environmental impact report, which we haven't seen. And why haven't we gotten the written documents that we should have been asking for at the Coastal Commission? This just breeds like, I can't believe this is going on. This is not right. So now that Cayucas has bowed out of paying for the dismantling service, because they say once they're out of there, that we will be in compliance. We will no longer have any issues. And this is in their EIR report. So it just keeps getting deeper and deeper. Why would you want someone who already has a job with the city, who has duties to be assigned, who doesn't have the knowledge and expertise that is needed to build a new plant? Why not just get someone who knows what to do, who's done it before, who has the knowledge and the expertise? It just seems like such an important project that we need to change the plant manager. So please recommend to the city council that we get a new plant manager. This is something that is such an important project for the sake of Morro Bay residents now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki. I think that relates more to item B2, but comments noted, we will get to that next on the agenda. So thank you. Go ahead, Bill.
Good afternoon, Bill Martini again. This is maybe a little off the subject, but I know we ran into this problem with the McIlvain property, and the question is, do we have this site secured, an option or that, as opposed to just kind of a, you know, that it's locked in, that, you know, you won't be designing on this site and then find out that some of the heirs or that are for it and some are not, and then you're back to square one. And that, and also there is a optimal, in my mind, pipeline easement that goes across the farmland as opposed to going through the city and tearing up the streets. And I didn't know if you're looking at different options, if the same owners of the property as far as securing a pipeline easement or at least having that option out there. So I do know, like, Morro Bay did design a boatyard on property at the north end of town, only to find out that they didn't even own the property they designed the boatyard on. This is back year 2000. So I think it's pertinent that we make sure that we have this property lined up before we spend a lot of money. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. Rob, I think you've addressed that before. We have.
That is correct.
So, also, one more question regarding the Cayucas demolition. Last estimate I saw, that was about $4.89 million, something like that.
Somewhere around $5 million.
That doesn't go away, right?
If no.
Okay, so that's an erroneous assumption that's floating out there. Thank you. Go ahead, Tina.
Thank you. Tina Metzgers, resident of Morro Bay, and by the way, resident on Nutmeg. And what Rob brought up about a leak in the Nutmeg area brings back a nightmare situation that we had when Dylan Wade was the city engineer, and the main water line going down Nutmeg blew out the street, and we had a river going down Nutmeg We had severe damages to property on Lower Nutmeg. And I'd like to make a comment, especially for the city council members that are in the audience right now, and remind them that the Rigetti Ranch right behind Nutmeg is a high hazard landslide zone. But they seem to be overlooking that and other fatal flaws, and they insisted on keeping Rigetti as an alternative. And while we're talking about that, I want to thank you all for your time all these years, all the meetings, all the reports, all the word for word presentations, dog and pony shows. I really appreciate what you're doing, your volunteer time, and I also appreciate that you had the wisdom to vote to take Rigetti off the list. It's too bad the council didn't take your wisdom. We were told at, I think it was maybe the September 26th council meeting, or maybe it was in early December, I asked why the EIR, the draft EIR, is 6 months late. And the city staff said it's because of the peer review. But it's my understanding from this presentation today that the project design and the facilities at the South Bay Boulevard site are still being figured out. So I'm trying to understand how the EIR consultants are managing new information that's coming in, that they have to write a draft EIR, and could that be explained to the audience here in WRFCAC? So was it just the one-day peer review that actually made the EIR 6 months late? Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Any other speakers for public comment? Go ahead, Ben.
Hi, Betty Winholtz. I added Barry Brannon's name because he forgot to sign it.
Thank you. We'll give you 3 extra seconds.
Thank you. I want to ask you to ask some questions, please. One of them has to do with the fact that all four of these companies are multinational, multi-international companies, and it's my understanding with federal trade agreements that they are not obliged to follow our environmental standards. And to what extent is that going to play into this with these kinds of companies? That really bothers me. I would also like to understand why Black & Veatch is allowed to bid when they've already done work for us on this project. I didn't think that was allowed, and could you explain that, please? I might be off on that. Third, I don't know still what the project description is and when is that going to happen, and it sounds like maybe it's already in this document that's going out on the RFP, RFQ, and that maybe it's in there, but I don't know that it's ever been voted on by the city council. So could you clarify that for me? I just want to reinforce, because I teach math and statistics, that this whole idea of averaging, that's including the peak days, is really statistically inappropriate, because you're including outliers that skew your data. And I'm hoping that some of you are math people and you know that and you'll figure it out and fix it. It's my understanding that we're building this plant for this current population and that we're not obliged to pay for future development, which would include an extra 2,000 people. And otherwise this plant's like growth inducing. And so could you clarify that? Because I thought that we who live here get to pay for our own sewer, but we don't have to pay for somebody's sewer in the future. Which also brings up a point that was in the slide about the solar panels, which reminds me that there's a $6 million office building, which is a bunch of other stuff going on out there. And I know that there's been disagreement at the city council level about, oh, those things were taken off the table at the April 24th meeting, and others say that they weren't. But if you look at the tape, Mr. Buckingham goes through there and says, do you mean the solar's off the tape? And the council says, yes. Do you mean that the office building's off the plate? Yes. And so I just don't get, that doesn't jive for me, those questions. And so I feel like we're paying for a lot of stuff that we're not supposed to be paying for. And my last question is, in the life cycle, are they accounting, are they telling us how many employees will be at this plant over the course of the 30 years? Is it more or less than we currently employ? Because it seems to me, as with all cities, your employee costs are a big expense, not just the energy. And so I'd like to know how many employees will be employed for this plant. Thanks.
Thank you, Betty.
I'm Nancy Bass, Morro Bay. I've sat through a lot of these things with these pretty things. I probably got a little stack of them at home. I don't know what the heck they said. I mean, really. And I consider myself probably an average, stupid lay person. So I don't think anybody else knows what they say either. But I have a lot of questions. I know you people don't get any pay for this, so I think you're wonderful for volunteering for this hot seat. But there are so many questions that haven't been answered after 3 years. And clearly, 167 is way too much for us to pay. I'm one of the people that gets less than 30 grand a year, and there's a lot of us. And when I hear you say the maximum price will be determined, and who's going to determine it? I haven't heard anybody really say what the maximum price is. Are you waiting for the design build team to come up with that maximum price? There's just so all those people that have spoke before have such good points, and it makes me so damn mad that they're not being listened to. So please, you listen to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
Kerrigan Mahan, Morro Bay resident. I agree. Hi, you guys. Thank you, too. I haven't been to too many of these. And I see Richard. I agree with absolutely everything everybody has said before this lectern. I don't agree with a lot of the things I heard, I'm sorry to say, from Rob or from Mike Nunley. I think it's time to change project managers. I can't imagine that I sat and listened to somebody read to me for 1 hour, I'm sure on the clock. That was the presentation. It was read. 1 hour. Wonder what that cost. And I wonder what that presentation cost. I mean, doing it, making all that. And then when we sent them away to bring the $167 million price down, they came up with $150. 2 weeks later, or was it a month, whatever, how many hours went into that? What did that cost us? And how much have we spent on these guys? Follow the money. There's a problem. There is a problem. This is absurd. I was shot down for referring to this as being insane, and I apologize for that. I'm not going to apologize for it today. This is insane, and it goes round and round and round and round. Barry Brannon stole my dog and pony show. This is like a bad play. You guys, we got to get proactive here. Nobody brought up 218. It's shameful to even be discussing another 218. $250, $300 a month for water in this little town that makes $54,000 average. This is really ridiculous. Anyway, thank you and welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Any further public comment on item B1? I think some of that relates to B2. We'd like to get to B2.
I don't have to sign this thing again, do I? I signed it once, right? Okay. Anyway, I do. I want to thank everybody on this panel for the hours that they put in. And I want to thank everybody in this audience for the hours they put in. I want my life back. I want to be able to have a date night with my husband and not have to read thousands of pages. And the bottom line is, I'm on fixed income. A lot of these people are on fixed income. And putting a sewer plant that we cannot afford is not right. It is not right. So please, please, listen to the people, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Any further comment? Any comment on staff on, I know we asked last time, Paul specifically asked about the project description. I think that's important. And you indicated, I believe, that would also be forthcoming or on the website, if I'm not mistaken. Can you, somebody just clarify?
Project description is in the environmental document and the FMP. So basically, when council accepted the FMP and the Master Water Reclamation Plan to proceed forward, that set up the parameters on how we got to where we're going to today.
And I believe we all received that big notebook for the facility master plan. That's what we're referring to, correct?
Correct.
And that's also on the website.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. And an abbreviated version that's maybe 20 or 30 pages also.
Okay.
The EIR will have a more refined project description based on changes that have been made since the publication of the FMP, like reducing the footprint of the facility that came up through the peer review, optimizing odor control on the site, those $16.7 million worth of fairly easy reductions that were made to the project. So that EIR, draft EIR is out in March, is when that will be made available.
Thanks,
but
Rob.
Basically, it's the FMP combined with the Master Water Reclamation Plan that set up the major parameters for the project.
Okay. And unfortunately, for many people, that's probably a lot longer and more complex than they want. So you did put a summary out there, but this obviously is a very complex project, so it's not going to be a two-paragraph.
Yes. And it's also, I think we all agree that it's a very expensive project.
Agreed. Go ahead, Val.
Ron, can you clarify, Mr. Roast?
Mike.
Move this big binder. Can you clarify, Mr. Rose mentioned that Black and Veatch wrote the specs as to who can bid on this project, and the idea that the consultants needed to show that they had worked on 280 million plants in the last 5 years, and I don't believe that Black and Veatch wrote that spec.
No, Black and Veatch did not write these the performance specifications, nor the state request for qualifications requirements. Their contract ended in June of last year, and they were engaged through the facilities master plan stage. When we issued the facilities master plan, before we had even any proposals on it, we said we would allow those firms that proposed on the facilities master plan to also engage in the design build process, because we wanted firms with expertise in wastewater design who we knew would be interested in design build to be able to also compete at the facilities master plan. And yes, our SOQ does say that, and I'll read it to you here, at least two of the five projects, example representative projects, shall be design build projects with a guaranteed maximum price of at least $80 million.
And they, we asked them to provide 10 examples of projects that they had worked on. Some of them were less than $80 million, certainly less than $80 million, and some of them were more than $80 million. So it seems to be almost like a middle of the road sort of figure.
Yes.
I wanted to also ask if maybe there could be a little bit more clarification. I know it was brought up, how come the draft EIR is late? Did we want to go back over and discuss that?
Sure. We've taken a few pauses over the last couple of years.
Just to remind about the pauses.
with this project. We've looked at a variety of sites, and that's caused a... as you remember, when we started the EIR, we were looking at the Rigetti site. That was not acceptable to the community, so we took a pause there and revisited the site selection process and have determined that the South Bay Boulevard site is the most optimal for the project. Because of the tight timelines, we need to deliver multiple aspects of this project at the same time. We don't have the luxury of doing a serial or one sequence, one right after the other, of this project. So we're working on procurement, design build procurement, at the same time as the EIR. But we have enough information on what the project will basically do, where it's located, what its proposed setting is, to inform the preparation of that EIR.
One of the other things that I wanted to clarify too is, and I think this is something that Betty brought up, is that because they do work in other countries, or they're considered multinational, although their home base is here in the United States, that that they're not obliged to follow environmental standards, and that's not, as far as I know, that's not something that's not true. But that we have certain environmental standards that need to be followed, both in the environmental document as well as all of through construction throughout the whole life of this project, and that those aren't being thrown out to the wind just because they happen to have built a plant in Australia.
That is correct. We also have a contract that we will be executing with the design builder that will hold them to certain requirements. They will have a contractual obligation to the city, not only, you know, the general legal requirements of the state of California, but we will have an actual written contract that tells them what they are to perform and how they are to perform that work.
Yeah. I think it bears that the whole idea of our peak days and this idea that they're outliers, but outliers are important in terms of the functioning of this plant. We have to account for the outliers. And that's when the whole discussion you had earlier in regards to the equalization basins and planning for a certain amount of flow. So, either we're going to agree or we're going to agree to disagree on that. But it seems like this is an important part of the project, is to capture when those events occur during the wet weather season and during the summer events when we have a lot of people in town.
Whether they're an outlier or not, every drop of sewage needs to run through that treatment plant and be treated.
So whatever we're going to call it. So I agree with that. Nancy Bass brought up the idea of the maximum price and what is this thing going to cost, and are we waiting for the design team to come up with whoever we choose? And I believe that potentially we are waiting to see what the best design that we're going to get for this project with the cost savings.
We accelerated procurement in this process to get a guaranteed maximum price that could feed into the rate analysis.
The rate analysis, yes.
Because of the community uncertainties with the engineer's opinion of probable costs that were felt to be way too high, the $150 million price tag, and to get that out to the bidding community based on the community goals of what we were building into our plant, what those costs were going to be.
So, in other words, yes, we do need to have those figures.
We do need to have those figures. I mean, what we have right now is an opinion of probable cost with built-in contingencies at $150 million is our best estimate right now for this project.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the project description again, and I don't know if it's actually published anywhere where we can read what it is, but there's an element that was brought up last meeting about the existing water treatment plant, that it may have to be rebuilt and retreat from the hazard zone. And if we're going to include recycling water in our project, then won't that be a component of the project, the rebuilding of the water treatment plant itself? Will that be part of the project description?
No, it's not part of this project description. It will be a project with whatever we have to do to that water treatment plant. We still need to do a little bit of geotechnical hydrogeo work to determine fate and transport of nitrate to make sure that we're actually going to have to run that through RO. There is some possibility that we will not have to RO that water to use it, but we're working on that as a parallel process also. Council will see in the coming months water supply analysis that kind of stacks up the various water supply alternatives, and you know, from cost effectiveness to resiliency, we'll be presenting that to council later on this month.
I have a question about what you just said about the engineering analysis. You said that right now your best judgment is $150 million?
Yes.
Okay. Did you provide that information to the people that bid on this project?
Yes. We gave them what our estimated construction cost without contingencies is. That's a requirement of state law. In you have to give what your estimated costs are.
So based on your experience, what is the likelihood that these four bidders were going to come in lower, much lower than 150?
Well, $150 million is the total project cost, including contingency, design work, all in. So the estimated construction cost is $89 million for the treatment plant. That's what we published in the RFQ. My experience is all on construction projects is all over the board. I've been the low bidder as an engineer on. I never liked that feeling because the market is such that everybody has work, so they can bid as high as they need to. I've also been in the middle. It just depends what the market is at the time that you're bidding the work. Ideally, public works jobs should be built during recession times when nobody's working. We're not at that point in time right now, and we really can't afford to wait.
Barbara, real quick, I'd like to move that we go past 5 o'clock.
Thank you, Paul. Second on that, please.
I'll second.
Thank you, Steve. Okay. Thank you, Rob. Paul, did you have another question, or was that?
Yeah, there was one thing I wanted to ask. As far as if we were to stop the process that we're in right now, go out and solicit more qualifications, would we ever really expect any different result than what we're getting right now? I mean, would we bring in another firm or would we expect a better audience of qualifications, or is this as good as it's going to get?
I think unless we made some major changes to the project, this is what we're going to get.
I got a question. You mentioned that this project, this $90 million, it doesn't have a reclamation component to it?
No, that includes reclamation, doesn't include injection wells.
Okay. Can you, regarding your $150 million, we had a 218 vote. You have $72 million to play with. Why are you assuming that you're going to get a 218 vote passed to get more money?
What I know is we have direction to proceed with a project that meets certain goals that have been adopted by the council.
Yeah, but you don't have that money. So you have like $72 million to play with.
Probably less than that, because $72 million was included Cayucas's share in a wastewater facility.
$56 million. So why are we going out and telling people we got $150 million for?
We're not telling anybody that we have $150 million.
What did you just say?
That's what our estimated total project cost is.
Okay, so you had $90 million
We told people that our estimated site construction cost was $89 million. We also told people that we had not finished the financial phase of the project, nor had we secured the 218. That was some risk that firms that we had talked to chose not to propose on this project.
Okay. Let's, from a ratepayer's standpoint, okay, we get water delivered to our house. It goes through our meter, okay? We paid for that. Okay, the citizens, you don't live here, but the citizens that live here pay for that, okay? They pay for the collection system, maintenance, all the way to the treatment plant. They pay for the treatment plant facility for operating that. Now, what you're proposing is pumping our commodity in out of the city limits, right, and then reclaiming it. Why? Once we get that commodity, our commodity of reclaimed water, how is that going back to the ratepayer? How is that adjusting the cost of what a citizen at a house pays? Because it's his commodity. It's their commodity. They paid for it.
Yes, but it has to be treated to a level to put it back
That's
into the
fine,
groundwater.
But once it gets treated, it's still theirs. And that commodity is worth more than like state water in paper in money, because it has a higher level of, because you're saving, you know, like reclaiming the aquifer or whatever. But it is the citizens of Morro Bay's commodity. It's theirs. They already paid for it. So how is that getting looped in to the cost?
We're looking at what the overall cost of that water supply is and comparing it to other water supply costs. So
it's still, the commodity's still there. Okay, I'm not questioning how you use it. I'm questioning why are we How is that going to affect our rates? Why do you, when we come back and loop it around, why do we need another 218 boat? You have enough money to do it.
I don't see where we, based on this project, where we have the funding through the existing 218 to pay for $150 million.
Well, not this project. This project is a stick build. We're reinventing the wheel here. We're like, you know what this reminds me of? It's like that song, One Piece at a Time. You know what I mean? From Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
You're buying parts at a parts store, and you're just piecing a car together when there's people out there that'll build it for you right from the get-go. It makes no sense.
Thank you for your comments. And Rob, I think we have on a future meeting to look maybe at a little more closely at the rate study. Several of us have asked that. What has been accumulated to date on the first 218, whether it's $56 million or $72 million, and then we will know what we need if you need another rate increase.
That is correct.
Okay. So anyways, I'd like to move on to, are you guys ready, B2?
Microphone's off.
Oh, sorry. My apologies. I'd like to move on to B2.
Well, before we conclude this, at least go with the staff recommendation that we recommend the City Council select the design build teams for issuance of the RFP based upon the input from our selection committee, which was to have all four teams that were submitted as qualifications, and rather than shortlist them and have interviews with the qualifications team, just have all four teams go right to RFP.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah. All right. Any discussion on that, or are we going to have a motion on that? Are we going to have an alternative motion?
I was wondering if we'd wait on that recommendation till we get done going through this with any further things, or do you feel it should be brought up now?
I'm just bringing up what we discussed yesterday at our selection committee.
Oh, okay.
That we go with the four teams, skip the interviews, have the four teams submit their proposals, and that's what we recommend to the City Council.
I could second on that.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to accept staff's recommendation on the RFP for the four teams listed here in item B1. Any discussion on that?
My opinion is we ought to recommend that we freeze all funding, all expenses on this until we get more clarity on what we're doing here.
Is that a motion, Richard, or is that just a recommendation?
Well, I think that's what we should recommend to the council, that we freeze all expenses at this point in time. Make a motion to do that.
Is there a second to that motion?
Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair, you have a motion and a second on the floor already?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. So we need to go through
you
the first
You need to satisfy that first
that,
before
we'll
you... entertain okay. any
All
other
right.
motion.
So pull Richard's motion. That's part of the discussion that may affect how we treat the first motion.
Can I just interject? I have a question. Okay, so we only have four bidders. That's what we have to deal with right now. How does that figure, how important is it to keep it to the four in order for us to try to go forward with the WIFIA funding? Because if we don't get the WIFIA funding, I mean, I just don't see how we proceed with the project, because that's our best shot at funding.
I see no advantage of eliminating anybody from the mix at this point in time. You may have any number of these firms drop out of their own accord because of business decisions. They may pursue another wastewater project that's more attractive. So I think, given that we have four and we had expected to interview up to four, I would think that we would want to keep all four in the mix.
So we would continue down this path with the understanding that they're going to try to beat $150 million because we said we're looking for creative solutions to lower the budget for this project. And if alternatively, if we don't go forward, There's a risk that we won't be able to meet the deadline for putting forth our proposal for WIFIA. And I can imagine that there are plenty of other municipalities out there that are lining up
you know, to be one of the 12 if we drop out? There were 12 states and municipalities nationally out of the entire country that were chosen by EPA to go forward with this funding.
Timeline is very tight to get that loan application.
And you want to remind everybody, when do we have to have that? What is the drop dead date?
Drop dead is July 18th of 2018. And we have to have our environmental document basically completed. We have to have a project that we will move forward with at that point in time.
And how far are we in the development process of the application?
We've basically started the application, but we need some information to fill in those boxes that will come out of this process and the EIR process.
Okay, so what you're basically saying is this is a fundamental step in getting that funding at the other end by going through with the bidding process and getting, even if some of the consultants fall out.
In my opinion, yes. With this project, we need to continue on this course to have any success with subsidized funding.
And in terms of the SRF loan, we've talked about this in the past. That's not a done deal, right? Because there's a lack of funding out there. Is that my
understanding? SRF is overextended. They're making decisions on projects as to their... What we have been told is the minimum project is not one they're interested in funding.
Right. So at this point, the WIFIA loan is the best bet we've got for Morro Bay.
WIFIA only supplies up to 51% of the project costs. We are going to have to have, we're going to need to rely on SRF funding. And our opinion and talking with our SRF folks is having the WIFIA loan and having multiple agencies fund a project puts us in a better position to receive SRF money or state revolving fund money also.
Okay, so it really, I mean, I hate to disagree, but it doesn't make sense financially to just say, let's stall the project right now. In your opinion, Rob?
With this project, we need to have subsidized funding to make it anywhere near affordable for the community.
Thank you.
Okay, Robin, just...
The figure you gave the four bidders was not $150 million in construction costs. It was $89 million. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And Rob?
Just let me finish one more thing. Okay. So if all four come back and we think the cost is too high, our leadership can make a decision at that time to go out and rebid.
We can reject all bids.
So we're not committing anything. We're just keeping the process moving and only have disclosed $89 million. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Steve.
You just asked my question.
Asked and answered.
That's not including the lift station and the force mains, correct?
Nor the injection wells.
That's not including the getting the crap there, right?
Correct. That's okay. About $14 million.
How you separated the project, right? You're saying, now how much is that going to cost, you think?
About $14
million. $14 million for
lift station and force mains.
All the force mains, buying all the easements you need or whatever.
Correct.
Okay, so back to the motion on the floor that Paul made and Steve seconded. Any further discussion on that? We're ready to vote on that. Okay, roll call vote, please. Go ahead, Steve.
Aye.
Paul?
Aye.
Val?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Ginny?
Aye.
Richard?
No.
Okay, so motion carries 5-1. Thank you. All right, now I believe we're ready for agenda item B2. This is the program management review. And
I'll be leading this.
You'll be leading this. Can you kind just of summarize it at a higher, since we have quite a bit of detail there?
Yes. Okay. Let me put the slide presentation in there. It's only really about 5 slides that we'll be going through.
Okay, fair enough. Does everybody have a copy?
I got an extra one here. I got it here. I sent a lot of comments to the council on this. I know.
but it's much better than everything else. I really need your expertise with your mechanical engineering.
Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is item B2. We're going to be maybe there we go. Reviewing program management. This review was directed by City Council at their September 26th meeting. As some people may recall, back in 2015, Council authorized a request for proposal for program management, and the program management was awarded to Michael K. Nunley, or MKN Associates, after that RFP process in August of 2015. As you may or may not know, it's more than just Mike Nunley and John Rickenbach that work on this project. It takes a whole multidisciplinary team of civil engineers, electrical engineers, wastewater process designers, and a multitude of people. And it's really not cost effective to add that staffing for this project to the city workforce. Components of project management include meeting and outreach support, grant and loan, environmental, we're doing permitting, we've master planned for water reclamation. As we saw tonight, they're acting as owner's representative for the design build process, prepare preliminary plans, layouts, construction management when we get to that point, and they'll be providing startup and operational support when we start running that plant. This slide didn't turn out as well as I thought, but we have a copy of a Word version in the packets that shows a the existing structure where MKN is the Mike Nunley is the program manager. He has his support team that works under him, reporting through up to City Council. I think, as the former city manager put it, Mike would be the department head in charge of the WRF project. A proposed structure would be have the Public Works Director, that's me, and your city engineer serve as the WRF program manager. Joe, our utilities manager, would serve as deputy program manager. We would backfill general public works duties. It's a little bit easier to find a generalist civil engineer to work on our street paving program development review than it is more specialty work. And then MKN would continue to provide technical and administrative support. Here's that proposed program structure. I would continue to report directly to Scott Collins, our city manager. Alternatives or other options would be to hire additional city staff. Don't believe that that's cost effective. Go out for an RFP for a new program management team. That would significantly delay the project and probably set us up for failure on our WIFIA and SRF funding. We could create a new project lead position, either a consultant or city staff person that would serve as the program manager to liaise with our program management team and then report directly to the city manager. I would be doing more of the conventional Public Works Department oversight and management, so it's supplanting one contract staff person for another. In our opinion, will be easier to find a generalist rather than a specialist. And just a reminder, we have a rather tight schedule that we're trying to meet with the WIFIA application deadline at July 17th, 2018. And that concludes my presentation, and happy to answer any questions. What we're looking for, we'll be bringing this to City Council next Tuesday night, looking for any comments that we can pass along to City Council. Thank you very much.
I got a quick question, Rob. So basically what you're stating is pretty much trying to keep it as status quo, but hire on another engineer to backfill in some of the positions on the general side of Public Works, correct?
And to have me take a more leadership role in the program management.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Comments? Go ahead, Richard.
Here's my problem. 12 years ago, you were notified that you did. 12 years ago, there was a studies. There were studies that were being done. Wallace Group did a flow study. Cleet and Associates did a nitrate study. In this WRFCAC, while we were here in WRFCAC, I mentioned to you that there is statements in there that were taken out of context, changing the meaning of these studies that were referenced. One of them in Cleet studies, they reference a EPA study on exfiltration, taking it out of context, completely changing the meaning of the whole report. On the Wallace flow study, I mentioned to you that prior to 2003, Cayucas didn't have accurate flows that were being submitted to the city. I calibrated those flow meters when I was there. You know that. I let you and the consultants know that. All those things have been ignored, and now we're talking about flows again. There's issues. When presented into the regional board, when presented for the collection system and the issue of the 6040 Main Street line, you continually misquote what the regional board had decided on. Continually. I don't have to say it. People can listen to the audio. I feel that. And then I asked you personally. I asked you, I asked Nunley, I asked Rickenbach, do you have sucralose in your tap water? Is it tainted with sewage? You say probably you don't know. You don't know because the reason being is the only reason why you'd have a sucralose test if you suspected sewage. We have it. As citizens living here in Morro Bay, we have it. And you ignore it. Okay? Now, recently, the wastewater treatment plant got an NPDES permit. Okay? Several years ago in Oahu, okay, in Hawaii, the EPA, Region 9, denied an NPDES permit because of collection system leaching. Okay? They denied it. Okay? We're supposed to be in California with a higher standard of level of treatment, a level of enforcement. And we're leaching sewage into a drinking water aquifer. And you know about it. It's been proven. And you've ignored it. You've stated in a letter that you sent out to the citizens in 2008 that you were going to have that fixed. In 2008, you're going to have it fixed on the next cycle of the CIP. That wasn't done. That was getting on 10 years ago. Meanwhile, we're continually leaching. Okay? What we need is a fresh look of somebody to come in here from the outside completely, take a look at what's happening here. Because this is, in my opinion, it's criminal. It's already gone past the, like, sublime. This is like total negligence.
Thank you, Richard. Jenny, did you have any comments? I do. Okay. So I do, and I forwarded some of them to Scott and Rob. I'm trying to understand with relation to item B2 and the project management. As you've said, staff is proposing we switch Mike Nunley and Associates as project manager, and we move that under your purview, correct, Rob?
That would be correct.
That would be a recommendation, right?
Yes.
And obviously we can't dump all that work on your lap, so we're going to backfill your public works duties with hiring additional consultants, or are you looking at subcontract labor or part-time labor? What exactly are you looking at?
So we're currently down a senior level engineering okay. position who mm-hmm. I relied on for a lot of the mm-hmm. My backup. Okay. We've been unable to recruit for that position for a couple of recruitment cycles. So it's likely we would, not likely, we are in the process of contracting with a local civil firm mm-hmm. to provide that backup assistance. So that's the assistance that we would be looking at.
Okay. And In my experience in the private sector with IT, there's a difference between going to firms like this for subcontract labor, a difference in the price you pay for that, versus going to a consultant firm and paying like MKN rates. Is that, are you finding a more economical way to backfill that is what I'm asking, or is it the same?
It's about the same.
Okay.
It would be yeah. more economical if we could find somebody to be a city mm-hmm. employee. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we had no qualified applicants that applied for that
okay.
Job.
Okay, so, and again, I'm speaking what I've, my own opinion as well as what I've heard from a lot of citizens. Would it be more efficient to find a project manager with specific water reclamation facility or water treatment facility to manage this, as opposed to going out and getting, you know, having you do it and having to backfill your position? And the reason I mention that is I was asked to participate on the several city recruitment boards where citizens and council interview, most recently the last city manager position. And there was a candidate there, obviously not Mr. Collins, that two other interviewers from other local city managers indicated might be a very good candidate for a project manager for this specific, based on, in other words, that person maybe wasn't qualified for city manager, but they had some very good WRF or related experience. Now, that's just a fleeing comment, but the fact that two other respected local candidates mentioned that, my opinion would be, until we go out and try to recruit for something, we don't really know what the market is out there. Now we're looking at January, New Year, maybe there's some qualified applicants. Rather than you, Rob, Mr. Livick, relinquishing his current duties and having to have, you know, somebody else. So that's one suggestion I have that would, and then I would propose that person report directly, be matrixed to Mr. Livick and report directly to Mr. Collins as a way to get maybe an outside look at this, but still maybe as a compromise. We get an outside look at this, and I also, some of my comments were, have you looked at how we can reduce these overall costs? Because MKN and contract these consultants, we already have budget approval for this year. Are we going to revise that budget? Otherwise, I don't see how we're going to reduce any cost. It seems to me we're just kind of moving some, you know, duties around, and just my opinion. But anyways, if you want to address that, or anyone else wants to comment on it, appreciate that.
One comment for me is that as our public works director, in this particular instance, this is your area of specialty. I mean, you have worked at plants before in California and out of state, and this is something that you do know a lot about. And so I don't know that he doesn't have the qualifications to be the project manager lead for a wastewater treatment plant.
Yes, I have worked in wastewater for most of my career. I don't think there's only one way to do this project management. I think this is a way. I think the alternative suggestion and the one that Ms. Magnolia brought up is another equally viable position. One of the aspects of that is I still don't get out of the wastewater treatment plant business because I am also your city engineer that is responsible for all your construction plans within the city. So I still have to have involvement in the project.
I have a question. This relates to what you just said. I wasn't part of that panel, so I don't know who you're thinking about. But I know that in the past, in the last 6 months, there have been people that have come to the WRFCAC meetings, and I've talked with several of them after the meetings, and they've expressed an interest in, these are citizens helping out with the project management. So I don't know whether the city has actually followed up on that or...
No, it wasn't a local resident, but I was just using that as an example to point out that if you do an active recruitment, you may find somebody locally or willing to relocate that may specialize in that, brings us another set of eyes, keeps Rob on his current public works director duties, just another way to do it and lower costs.
So you said, Rob, that basically you have done recruitment, but it was for a general engineer?
Yes.
Not a program manager.
Not a program manager.
Okay, I would agree with you.
One thing I want to ask, and as I remember when the city council first brought this up about the program management, was they were trying to look at, rather than pay a consulting firm, the idea was to bring someone on staff to handle those duties. And I'm just not sure what you brought here today probably answers their needs, so to speak. So I guess that would be my first question. What Barbara brought up was probably maybe a valid example of trying to get someone in here to handle those duties and not do so much the backfill. Especially right now, I'm not quite sure I'd want to change horses at this point in the process, but I could see it happening once you go to construction and things of that nature. When things will settle down here in the next year, hopefully, once you have, you know, your contractor in place and the work's proceeding, that it doesn't require that outside consultant with this full-on team providing you backfill or providing you the services of the program. You know, do you follow where I'm going with it? Because I did listen to the city council meeting the night this came up, and that's the feeling I got from hearing was they were trying to bring it in-house as opposed to, you know, and trying to get the consulting side of it out of the picture.
And Robin, Scott, where I'm coming from is $50 an hour labor rate unburdened equates to $104,000 salary. And I know for some of these positions, we cannot get somebody in for 3 months, 6 months. We need a consultant at $300 an hour. But in terms of a program project manager for 3-4 years, it seems to me that cost would be, you know, a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth of what we're going to pay a consultant. That's why I was kind of asking about the subcontract labor, right, versus that. Go ahead, Scott.
Thank you. What we're looking for is some flexibility. I just started 2 months ago. Very, very interesting project, to say the least, and a lot of twists and turns along the way. And one thing that has been consistent is Rob, that he's been here for most of that, and the vast knowledge and experience that he has is extremely important to somebody who's brand new. I've sat in the meetings with Rob and his staff and with the consultant firm, and I've also worked on major projects for Santa Cruz, Boulder, and Denver, and feel that they're at the exact same level of competency and commitment to fulfilling not only city council's goals, but the community goals, which have changed dramatically over the last 10 years. And they're keeping track with that. And I realize that the project is expensive, and that's creating consternation, as it should in the community. especially a community this size. So my view of it is, you know, I want to come in and ask the same kind of questions that are being asked by the community, and we're getting responses from staff. Bringing somebody brand new in addition to having a brand new city manager, may create more issues than not. But I do appreciate the standpoint of Sandowski and others who are saying, well, you know, fresh set of eyes, that's appealing, absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to bring to the project and ask the same kind of questions I'm hearing repeatedly, and our council members are hearing those same questions, and we want to be responsive to those. As it relates to the project lead, I think, as Stephen had said, you know, looking long-term, that might make more sense. We also have departmental needs in the Public Works Department, as well as planning and other departments, where we're losing staff. This is the best time to be looking for a job, period, probably in the history of our country, especially for government employees. It's really, really difficult to hire engineers. It's really difficult to hire planners. This is what I heard from Pismo, Grover Beach, from the city of SLO, county of SLO. It is very hard to hire people who are extremely qualified. Coming back to where I am sitting now, I have a very competent, very qualified person who I feel is ready to lead the project, but I also understand that he has needs overall to manage his department. We have some flexibility by hiring this somebody in kind of a temporary status to evaluate the overall structure of the department and maybe what we can do to increase the likelihood of somebody actually applying for a job. We're stuck in a position where we're not even getting applicants. So I have to be realistic about what we'd be able to attract for a project lead position if that's the direction we go. So these are kind of things I'm wrestling with myself, and the council clearly is wrestling with, and we'll have a really good discussion on the 9th. So this input is incredibly important for me.
Okay, thank you. I do know that we have a lovely community here, and you know, we're not talking a six-month assignment, so we might have a little more, you know, attention or traction for potential candidates. Go ahead, Paul.
Will you have to amend the contract with MKN and Associates? Will they see a reduction in their anticipated costs or expenses?
No, their time and materials, not to exceed. We'll just tell them to do less things.
So in answer to my other question, we wouldn't see any specific reduction until the end of the year, the budget actuals, and then next year negotiate lower NTE.
I think I estimated maybe up to about $20,000 savings for the remainder of the year if you just factor in meetings. Mm-hmm. That was my easy look at the cost savings.
Okay, thank you.
Rob, you've probably already considered this, but when you said that you had recruited and you just couldn't find the right candidate, I'm assuming you also looked into Cal Poly, right? Because you're a graduate of Cal Poly.
So we're looking for a journey level engineer, somebody not. We did end up hiring a recent Cal Poly grad to backfill another more entry level opening. The staff that we have there has no experience. I need more journey level, not recent graduate level. I need an engineer that can make independent decisions without having to, you know, come to me with every question on a project.
Right. Okay.
We didn't have public comment on this. We had, if you spoke during B1 on B2, please don't speak again on the same subject. But go ahead.
I agree with where you're going, Barbara, on this. I really think we need a new set of eyes, as Richard is saying. So I think we can do that. Cayucas. We met with Scott the other day, and it was pointed out and recommended that he go meet with them. They've been unbelievably successful. And again, if we can't figure this out, we can go buy service from them. They've figured this out. Exhibit one, why we need a change. This guy right here, this presentation. It says here, review and direct by council at their September 26, 2017 meeting. This document could have been prepared in about 2 days. 2 days. How, you know, look, if all you're going to do is go back and say, keep things the way they are, and now we're here, and now we're saying, oh, we can't stop the thing. I don't see that. Also, the staffing for Mr. Nunley. Now, these are not necessarily FTEs, I guess, full-time equivalents, but this is, the staffing is ridiculous. We're talking project management, not an engineering staff. So I don't even understand what that's about. It doesn't even make sense to me. Does Cayucas, the reason why this is $150 million versus $25 million probably is because of this and this type of approach to management. I don't know where one of you asked a question about what if we change the spec. I think it was Paul. Now, two things I think are in the spec. One is the $85 million. I don't know who put the $85 million in there. Somebody decided $85 million, which knocked out a bunch, including the people doing Cayucas, which then needed to get Black and Veatch probably to make the $85 million threshold. So if you get rid of the $85 million. The other thing is that design. We didn't say, please get input-output parameters. The reason they another reason why they couldn't build is because of that. Now, Rob said that Black and Veatch had nothing to do with the spec. So that tells me that Black and Veatch did not create those drawings, because those drawings were the essence of the spec. Black and Veatch maybe didn't actually put the boilerplate on. If that's the definition of they didn't do it, fine. But that takes, anybody could do that. But if Black and Veatch did that design, you got to then, anyway, if you could please ask whether they did or not, and have Mr. Nunley and Mr. Leivick built, can they meet the same criteria that they have managed $85 million projects? Because if you're going to put that level up for other people, not operational, that's a different skill set, managing, you know, the plants running and everything, versus a project manager versus construction manager versus engineer. So I would hope they would meet the same criteria. And again, Barbara, where you're going and Richard's going, I totally agree with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Any other public comment?
Do we sign it again, though?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to point out, we keep dropping facts that, you know, you were just talking about, you were so concerned, Jenny, about the WIFI loan. We don't need the loan. The WIFI loan is necessary for our $150 million project, not for a $50 million PERC plant. We don't need it. And all this, we got to go. No, we got to stop. And I'm, with all due respect to Nunley and Rickenbach, how much money have we spent? Huh? No, does anyone know? Can I get a figure? 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 million? 6? Do I hear 6? Do I hear 7? Go. What do we got? Now, is that coming out of our 218 money? Is that, no, where's this 7 million? What's that coming out of? What fund? Okay. So we're throwing millions of dollars around like we're all $100 million millionaires. 85 million, 90 million. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. Now, I'm being redundant. But this WIFI, I think, well, you're not going to make it on the timeline. That's gone. There's way too much to do. And at the pace we do this thing, we just go round and round and round and round. No. That's not necessary. We keep dropping PERC. Why? Why are we? We have the capability of doing this for $50 million. Mr. Leivick said it at the last meeting. He was asked, it's on tape, can we build a sewer plant for $50 million? Yes. Oh, where do you go with that? What's the motive here? What is the motive?
Hi, David Nelson again. I hope I did say that I really appreciate what you people are doing. You know, I did this for 16 years because of a project that these people worked on was the power plant. And they chose to listen to their consultants. They chose to listen to the people that were building the plant. They didn't choose to listen to the citizens out here that put in thousands of hours. I personally read so many documents. I probably read as many as anybody in this city. And we came up with the conclusion that it was bad for our city. We didn't have to do that with this project. This project stank from the beginning. We've come as citizens to the council. We've come to here saying this isn't the way to do this. I hope that our new city manager gets to go and review the PERC presentation. I really know that there's other companies other than PERC that does this, but PERC put their neck on the line. PERC put up that $100,000 to come to give our council the knowledge what they could do. And what they could do, let me tell you what they can do. Everything that he just had up there that we're going to hire somebody to do, they were going to come in here. They have a package where they will permit it. They will review it. They will build it. What else do you need? You can have a project manager who's just watching the dollars flow and make sure everything's going the way it's set. A company like PERC, and they're not the only company. That's my problem. I've been trying to do this from the beginning. But this project came, like I said, from the old power plant that they told the Coastal Commission we weren't going to build. Jamie Irons put this in his pocket, made him believe that we were going to have a say in this, where we could call companies like PERC in, who don't do $85 million projects because they don't have to. They build what we need for under $50,000. I go just look on the internet and look for sewer plants. Don't look for wastewater treatment. Look for sewer plants. And you're going to come up with companies on all over this country and outside the country. Most of the new technology, and I say new technology, that's the main thing here. We're building old technology with new money. When we could have a company like PERC come in, they're going to guarantee us that we're going to show them the lot, and they're going to guarantee us every step of the way. Look at review PERC's presentation. AGP has it in the archives. Please, just at one of your meetings, just play it. It's not that long. They're wonderful presentations, and this is the only taste that I've got, and I think Richard probably and Mr. Lovick were in the room during the PERC presentations. What can you complain about? I mean, this is a company that has a track record. They're in California. I'm sorry, but, you know, please, stop this madness. You're going to continue this madness, and we're going to keep going down this road, and they're going to tell us next couple Thank months you. We don't have time. They wasted the time. 4 years they haven't asked for bids for real plants.
Tom Rost again. Is it Richard?
Yes.
Richard has the exact what needs to be done, and Barbara has exactly what needs to be done, and that's fresh eyes. And I've stood before the council on two occasions, and I've talked to Scott. You have not been served well by your consultants. You're not being served well by your staff, because nobody has presented in open forum alternatives. Los Osos, Cayucas, small plants, nobody has brought costs to you, estimated. A good engineer who's working for the citizens and the council will have a cost estimate, and there will be alternatives. You don't have any alternatives. Nobody's being given fresh eyes and gone to Cayucas or going to Los Osos and making these cost estimates to give you alternatives. They're not there. And they're not serving you well. They haven't, and they aren't. And you need somebody, an engineer, who knows what he's talking about and will go out and find alternatives and present them to you. That's all I got to say. You're just going down a blind road here to spend money that doesn't need to be spent, and most of the citizens you represent can't afford what you're thinking about. They can't do it. When Richard said you're building a lift station and piping, but you really don't know what you're going to put through it. It's like building an elevator, and then we're going to have a 14-story elevator, but we don't know what the size of the building's going to be. It doesn't make sense.
Thank you, sir.
Barry Randall, Associate of Morro Bay. I'd like to reiterate that Los Osos went to a virgin piece of ground, just like we're going to a virgin piece of ground. They designed a plant that was going to do 1 million gallons a day. So it's a big plant. Their plant did not cost $70 million. If you look at the numbers, you'll find that Los Osos plant, I'm not talking about the pipelines or any of that stuff, and they have a plant that's twice too big, and it's a long ways from town, but their plant cost them in the area $70 million. So when you get that in your head, it insults us to say, look, you got to do it for $150 million. I'm sorry, you don't. And the numbers that Mr. Leivick proposed in the water master plan of 970,000 gallons a day is an insult, because that's not what the numbers show. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
Nancy Bast again. It's pretty clear to me, like the water leak that it's a disastrous water leak. It seems to me that Mr. Leivick has all he can do to fix the infrastructure of this town, which is the leaking sewer pipes and the leaking water pipes. If somebody is in this town has piped their rainwater into the sewer, there should be somebody in the sewer in the city that goes around and tells them that it's no longer the right thing to do. Certainly, the planning department should never okay that on any kind of a remodel or a new house. If we would fire these guys that have been ripping us off, we could afford a real guy that looks out after our financial well-being. That being said, the last fiasco with the sewer plant that the Coastal Commission banned, we had Montgomery Watson Harza that did the designs. We had a former employee of them who was our project manager. And then they hired their old buddy that worked with both of them prematurely for another $250,000 a year, and they did nothing. He did nothing. So we need a guy that really works for us, and not somebody that is a good old boy in the system. We need somebody that works for us. Mr. Leivick has plenty of work to do with our leaking pipes. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Any other public comment? We're running up against another meeting coming on board, so we're going to need to wrap this up.
Thank you again for all your work and staying late.
Oh, Thursday, I'm mine, sorry.
I think in terms of management.
Hold off, Jeff.
Yeah.
A minute. Stop time. I'm sorry. I made a wrong statement about another meeting coming in, and so I want to wait.
Okay.
I want to hear all your comments.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. So I've managed a lot of projects, large projects, throughout my career. In California, there's a state law that for any education projects, which typically run in the hundreds of millions of dollars, that the existing staff at that school district cannot manage the projects regardless of their competency. And the reason for that is they don't want disruption to their day-to-day operations, which, let's face it, have to be challenging for Mr. Leivick, his enormous technical knowledge. It's required by state law that you hire a third-party independent person to manage this bond money. There's a good reason for that. Why they didn't extend that law to all public agency projects, I don't know, but it's not a law. My recommendation is, to bottom line is, with the project and the way it's been managed, there doesn't seem to be an advocate for us. And it doesn't stop here with Nunley or Mr. Leivick or any, or, you know, it stops at the level of the city council, in my opinion. And I'm talking to you tonight about this, and I'm going to talk to them at the next meeting. It's important that the community have a sense that there's someone fighting for us, fighting for our dollars. There's a big difference between being a public works director and managing and dealing with huge multinational firms. Let's be honest. They'll run circles around us, and we won't even know what they did to us. Let's be frank. These firms don't get huge unless they are making money and controlling the project. And that's the real risk here. AECOM isn't just a big, large company. It is the largest company. It is the largest American company that provides engineering services both in this country and around the world. They are going to run circles around us unless we don't have someone here who really knows what that job is all about. It's really a different job description than what your public works director does. So my opinion is that the council needs to step up. Somebody needs to step up and push back. There's no one on the council who's pushing back that I know of. Scott Collins could be a perfectly fine person to be in charge of this project, although I'm sure that didn't come up in his job interview, and I haven't talked to him about that before this very moment. But you need someone in a financial position to manage this project who's watching the checkbook. These are big firms. If you end up going with these huge firms, you better have somebody in place to watch out for our money. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hi, I'll just be a moment. Steve Stevens, I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I also really do think that we need a fresh set of eyes here. It's unfortunate. I appreciate very much the effort that everyone has made. I know that you know, this must be rather overwhelming for Rob. But I think our consultants have really done a disservice to us, and it's really exemplified by that chart, the flow chart, using figures going back to 1992. I mean, you talk about irrelevant information to weigh something, and then I can't even see it. All I can see is a grid. I don't actually see, you know, numbers that were up there. So, just very, very concerned. I think a fresh set of eyes, and I do think alternatives are important. I think the bottom line here for the citizens of our city is that it comes down to: are they going to vote for a $150 million project? Are they going to be able to afford a $150 million project? And it's common sense that if you have an alternative of a $50 million project or $150 million project that people can't afford, that can change the character of our city, it's a very, very difficult dilemma. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Is there any other public comment regarding this item?
Tina Metzger, Morro Bay. Over about the last, 22 months that I've observed this whole issue, I must say that professionally, I have served different jurisdictions in the state of California, and in the private sector and in the public sector as a professional planner. And what I've observed in this situation is the worst case that I've ever seen. In my opinion, I think Rob Livick is overworked. He's overwhelmed by this. He was hired to be the city engineer. He needs to be the city engineer. I think this is way too much for him. And it would be for anybody. I mean, I felt really bad for him this whole time. I think it's too much on his plate. It's not fair to have someone take care of the city and also this huge project. So that's my professional opinion. He's trying to do his best, but he has too much on his plate. As far as the consultants, I can't really say everything that I know about Mike Nunley, but I can say that quite a few people have no confidence in him or his work. I can say that staff reports that I've read that were completed by him, there were so many things that were left out purposefully to skew the whole thrust, and there were things that were put in that weren't correct. And it's, do I come every time and make those corrections? No, I'm not a babysitter. But as a professional, I can see those mistakes or those purposeful things that... thank you. that mislead the council and the public. We need a new cast of characters here. We need an owner's agent that looks out for us, the citizens. This is an environmental justice issue, by the way. We're not going to be able to afford the plant and the project that's going down the tracks for the train wreck. This is a train wreck. I've watched this happen over, I got involved in February 2016? This is the worst case I have ever seen. And we need to do something right now, because we can't keep making this excuse. Well, we're on a timeline. You know, Nunley and the city have had years to get this right. And this is a big screw up.
Thank you, Tina. Any other public comment? Right, seeing none, I'll close public comment. So, any discussion on this item B1?
I'm sorry, I forgot to say, could you make a motion to do something tonight?
We're discussing that. Thank you. So the recommendation was, the staff's recommendation was provide comments or make any other recommendations. We may or may not make a motion based on our discussion, but I'm open for any discussion. I've proposed an alternative slightly different to what was proposed by staff, and now I think we can discuss that. I'd like to hear some other comments, questions.
Rob, could you go over one more time what the staff recommendation is?
Staff recommendation would be to use MKN as project technical support. I would take over program management. Joe would become the deputy program manager. We would backfill some of the immediate public works needs with a general civil firm.
Any other comments or suggestions? Anybody?
Well, I think I made my comment a little earlier at the time you did, Barbara. And, you know, I have every confidence Rob could handle it as program manager, but I think at the end of the day, the city council is looking for a cost savings from the fact of having a consultant in here on a full-time basis and trying to turn it back into an employee, so to speak, of the city. And I think that's the track that this needs to follow, since that's their wishes. They are the decision makers. We're just a recommendation board. But my feeling is that, you know, you either go out to try and hire someone to handle the program management, or Rob becomes the program management and then go out and hire somebody to be the city engineer. That's, you know, and that's how I would see it.
That's and what they're recommending.
The decision be made at that point. If you can't find somebody who has Rob's qualifications in wastewater, then he becomes the, you know, he becomes the program manager. You find somebody who has a stronger background in that, he becomes the program manager, and Rob stays his position as public works director. That's my recommendation.
Thank you.
It seems to me that your savings is that by taking on the program management, there's less work for Mike Nunley to be doing, and it's as an as-needed basis.
Yes, and as I pointed out, it's really not just Mike and John.
Right.
It's preparation of the technical specs did not happen by two people.
Right.
There was electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, process engineers writing that. Writing the, of course, we're done with this now, the Master Water Reclamation Plan. It wasn't just Eileen doing that. She had her staff there helping her do that. So it's really not a one-man job to maybe to manage the program, but the full depth of program support and management is a multiple disciplinary firm to run this project.
So we understand that MKN would continue to provide administrative and technical support on an as-needed basis. And for the member of the audience that asked, what is the cost to date? At our last meeting, we had our quarterly review that listed all the consultant contracts. So that information is being tracked and watched. We may not like the volume or the numbers, but it is there, and we are reviewing that. So that information is out there. I would propose that if we, move the project management to either Mr. Livick, as the city has proposed, or as my recommendation, an independent outsider, we presumably will save some money because we're not paying the MKN current program management rates. We would be paying city salary.
If it were a city salary person, if it were an outside consultant, it's going to be difficult to. It's a published rate.
Right.
Mike's rate is $175 an hour. Is his billable rate? That's in the engineering world these days. That's a fairly reasonable rate for a senior level person. Very reasonable rate for a principal.
Okay, I agree. So let me be clear. My recommendation was to hire a city employee, not another consultant.
Okay.
Manage the
okay,
project.
Okay, I understand.
So.
That's where I was driving.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Or at least that's what I understood city council to be pushing right, yeah. it towards that direction. Unless I'm not speaking on their behalf, but that's what I heard when I listened to the tapes.
And with the advantage of an outside set of eyes looking at this, maybe there's a way to reduce some of the other, quote, consulting costs we're currently
correct.
Paying as we move down the path.
Well, I agree with you. I thought, and I've listened to what you've said, too, about a new pair of eyes to see this. But I guess my question might be difficult for you to answer, but if you had your druthers and you had to pick one or the other, would you prefer to be the project manager or continue with your current job? You don't have to answer that if it's too too personal?
I'd love to do both, but I just don't have the time to do both.
You can't do both. So pick one if you could.
And in a perfect world, it would be black or white. And right now, as I explained earlier, and talking to my new colleagues and all the city managers in this area are struggling with this very thing. They can't hire people to serve as staff for these important critical roles. And we're really at a point where we have to think completely differently about that, looking to contract with the county to do some of our functions. I mean, we're at a point where we might have to consider that. So in a perfect world, I would have a project lead tomorrow lined up and ready to go, and Rob back in the public works chair, and, you know, here we go. But that's probably not a likely reality. And the other component of this is that I'm new, and we do have these deadlines in front of us that, you know, I know there's some issues about that. Some people feel like maybe we're on the wrong track, and we feel we should start over. But we're down this track. Council's put us on this track, and we're moving ahead. If we have to bring in somebody new to lead the project, that creates some issues for me, just in terms of having faith in their understanding of mm-hmm. the whole history of the project, all the context that's involved, and not just cherry-picking information or learning from one thing. Like I'm doing right now, I'm out in the community hearing things, but I have to check in with the folks who have been involved in the project, I have to check in with council, I have to do my own history, or digging into the history. Bringing in a project lead from the outside, yes, new eyes. There's two sides to that. One is, yes, they're new eyes. They can look at things a little differently, but we are on this track.
I appreciate that, but actually you reminded me of something. You'd mentioned the county as a potential resource. I don't know who worked on the Los Osos project, but... who?
John Diodati.
But who... He was the project engineer or the project manager?
No, he was the citizen advisory council chairman for the citizens in Los Osos when they recalled those three council people. And then he got a promotion. Now he's the lead over at Public Works at the county.
Who was the project manager for Los Osos?
It was John Waddell at the county, and Rosalind Pizza assisted him. They both still work there, I believe.
Okay.
John Waddell's head of construction now at the county.
Well, what I was thinking is maybe if there's a possibility of like job sharing or on loan, as you mentioned, if we could hire on a temporary basis to help Rob out with the project management.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is something I'd be willing to look at, and this is why it's important that we have the committee that we have, is because you can bring these ideas that we're not thinking of to council to consider. But ultimately, the thing that I'm looking at is our timelines and knowing where we need to get and knowing the folks who I can trust, that they understand this to the nth degree, where I don't, that I can trust that they'll get it done. But I think there is some potentiality looking beyond those deadlines and transitioning to a different structure, or with somebody from the outside, if you will, or bringing somebody on as a staff member to lead the project. Once we get there, and once I have a better feeling of what's out there. But as it stands right now, I mean, we literally are having these conversations around the county, but nobody can find anybody.
Thanks, Scott. We would just ask you to, you know, like you say, think out of the box, be flexible. You know, it's interesting because yourself and the new finance director have been here, including the holidays, 6 to 8 weeks, and I'm very impressed with both, and especially with what Ms. Callaway was able to find. So, you know, in terms of some mistakes, shall we say, 2+ years ago in some of our reporting, that tells me if we bring an experienced, competent person on board, they can catch up, get up to speed pretty quick, you know, for what we need. So we would just ask you to consider that.
I would think that maybe at this particular phase, that would be the wrong thing to do, to bring somebody in that's new, but to get us through this hump, and then maybe as we move on to whether further into design or the construction phase, turn over those aspects of project management to someone else. And I would recommend that we follow their proposed recommendation here, because we would lose all of this corporate history from that that Rob has in regards to the project, and bring somebody else on board that can handle some of the other aspects of what the Public Works Director is also responsible for, but with the eye that as time goes on in the development of the project, because there's different stages of the project, but this part is really critical, getting us through the environmental phase, getting the design build on board, getting the environmental document out so that we can get our funding, that's critical. And then to, but then say, okay, we're going to go off on a different track at this particular phase may not be the appropriate place to do it. But after this phase is over, shifting to bringing on another project manager to take the finish the project. I don't know.
Just because somebody's an engineer, a civil engineer, doesn't make them a project manager. Project manager is a specific skill set, and we haven't had a good one here. We got a community that's totally confused on what is going on. It's no clarity because it just spins around. Okay, what we need, and you know, and I've been sitting up here, and half the time it's like, what are we, you know, what are we, what project are we talking? What is the project? We gotta right now. Let's design and build this facility. We don't even know. We haven't even got to step one, getting the sewage there. Okay, that's not a way to build a project. So we need to hire a outside person. There's people here that can do this, and I'll give you a name if you want right after the meeting that possibly you could contact this new set of eyes and look at all the options and not present RFPs that we as if we have money that we don't have. Okay, that's just backwards. Okay, we don't even have. We have an opinion that we don't need an LCP. We have an opinion that we don't need, you know, that we don't need coastal approval for certain things. But we, to this day, I haven't gotten a clear from anybody in the city council. I talked to a city council person. How is this project helping our community from a public health perspective? Right now we have Cayucas leaving. We can stay put. We just got an NPDES permit from the regional board. What are we driving? What's driving this? This has turned into a like some kind of a carny game.
Your response. Give you enough.
Yeah. Any other comments? Anybody want to make a motion for anything?
Make a motion that we hire a recommend to the city council that we have somebody outside of the current administration to look at this project with a new set of eyes.
Is there a second to that motion? I'll second it. Any discussion on that motion? Further discussion, I should say. All right, let's do a roll call vote. Start, Richard.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
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 So I believe 3-3, that's not enough to pass. Right. Might have to ask the math person out there, but...
I didn't think it called for a motion on this particular item. I thought it was just recommendations.
Staff recommends. Okay.
I didn't read it as a motion making kind of.
But an important thing to note is that this discussion is on TV, of course, and we have some council members in the audience. This will be relayed back to council in an oral presentation to say that the board was split. You heard the general considerations. And I'm taking this input, by the way. Yes, I am new. And I appreciate how much effort is going into this and how much effort is coming from the community. Again, the thing is we're on this track, but we want to be flexible to support the Public Works Department, to make sure that the project is reviewed to the level it needs to be done. And so we'll take all this under consideration. Of course, City Council will as well.
Okay, very good. And the reason I asked for a motion is, just for clarity, because of the recommendations, if all of us felt unanimously about one particular point, and you don't know that till you get a motion on the floor, discuss it, and vote on it. So we're obviously, I think we're close, but we're a little bit divided. But regardless, if staff will listen to all our recommendations and discussion, and we have the majority of council here anyways, presumably they're paying attention, so that will. I guess, are there any other closing comments I would ask for before?
Only one I could say is, I sit on two boards. I sit on this, and I sit on the PWAB, and very often I don't see participation from the public. So even though it may be negative at times, that does not bother me in the sense that I do like to see the public participate in these meetings, because at least your voice is heard at that point. Even though you think sometimes we may not be listening to it, we do indeed listen to it, but sometimes there are other extraneous reasons why we vote in a different direction. Thank you.
Paul?
As far as the vote, I voted no on the last motion was because I just see this as an additional expense. Why do, if everybody's complaining about consultants that we have right now and you're adding another contract employee, another consultant, I just see it as another expense. We've got to keep the cost down, and this is a way of doing it.
Thank you, Paul. Val, anything?
I want to thank Tina for recognizing that Rob does carry a lot on his shoulders, and I agree with that, and to figure out a way to more equalize the workload, distribute the workload a little bit differently. I think that's really important.
And my closing comment would be, because I hear from the public a lot about do not delay, or delay, stop. Coming from the finance, because I serve on another finance committee, and I know one of our council members probably about 2 years ago quoted a daily cost of delaying this project at the maybe whatever it was, $100 or $75 million as $7,000 a day, with a figure from Rob in terms of 3% construction escalation cost. That's construction only. If we translate that $150 million, just to be clear, it's over $13,000 a day every day we delay. That doesn't mean we move forward and throw good money after bad, but we're all trying to consider that. And that, oh, by the way, that $13,400 a day, compounds over time. So we appreciate the public comment. We are listening to you. We're trying to balance a whole lot of things to keep this complex project moving yet affordable. That's our commitment from all the members I've worked on this committee. So I just want to close with that comment. Ginny, please.
So I would echo what my colleagues have said. All along, I've wanted the most affordable project, and one of the reasons why I was focused, or I'm continuing to focus on WIFI alone, is it's nice to have something in the bank. I'm hopeful that in the end, we're going to come up with a project that's not going to cause people to move from Morro Bay because they can't afford the rates. So I've said that in the past, and I'm going to say that again, and I do appreciate everybody's comments, and we're trying to do the best we can up here to represent you. Thank you.
I've been involved in this project since about 2003 when I worked in Cayucas, and it started out as an upgrade and stuff. And I feel what we've done is we're turning our consultants into millionaires on the backs of the citizens of this community, the citizens of Morro Bay. The citizens of Morro Bay don't necessarily have the same agenda as a county. What's good for the city doesn't necessarily mean it's good for the county. And what we've done is we're taking our commodity that we pay for, like I'd explained earlier, and we're pumping it out outside the city limits. When the regional board came in and asked the city council to take a pause, the city responded by saying that they were going to have a workshop to look at it. That never happened. We had all the WRFCAC meetings canceled during that pause. Back in 2006, I volunteered several reports on collections and showing the deplorable collections, state of our collection system. We have a liquefaction damage throughout our city. We should be focusing on fixing on infrastructure before moving and doing any kind of project like this. This project makes no sense. It makes no sense from a climate change aspect. If you're going to do a managed retreat, it doesn't need to be a leap into the county's jurisdiction. Managed retreat means moving back, okay? And I feel that what's different between everybody here and myself, I sit on the Planning Commission. A Planning Commission is an advisory. It's not advisory. We're advisory here, but it's not advisory on the planning. A Planning Commissioner is an appointed public official. It's a, like, the mayor doesn't have a choice to have a Planning Commission. It's legislative. It's like semi-judicial, okay? Calling a Planning Commission advisory is like calling the San Luis Superior Court an advisory to the appeals court. It isn't. We make decisions. When I've asked to look at land use during that pause, staff was told not to address that issue. I'm going to ask to put this into the record, okay, and into the minutes written out. I will send you a copy and thing, but this is what I want written in. I, Richard E.T. Sadowski, U.S. citizen living in Morro Bay, a member of the Morro Bay Planning Commission and appointed public official position and a WRFCAC member, entrusted with the tort law of duty of care, am appealing to the California State Attorney General's Office, Javier Becerra, to investigate the Morro Bay WRF project and the negligence associated with the sewage exfiltration from our sewer collection lines into the Morro Basin drinking water aquifer. That's all I have to say today.
We are adjourned to the next special meeting next Thursday, same time, same place, January 11th. Thank you.
Hey, I hope you feel better. You're back, okay? Oh, yeah. Oh.